Al will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, Al.
There's always a pecking order. Little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our Patreon sponsors. If you'd like to become a Patreon sponsor yourself, please go to the website bodybuildinglegendshow.com, and in the upper right-hand corner, you'll see the link to become a Patreon donor. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding, and we also talk about the history of bodybuilding. I'm your host, John Hansen, and Merry Christmas. Today is Christmas 2022, so I hope everybody out there is enjoying their Christmas with their family and their loved ones. On today's show, we have probably one of our favorite guests ever on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, Mr. Jerry Branum. And Jerry, it seems like it's been a long time since we talked to him, but he is back. And we are going to do our end of the year review that we always do. So if you're new to the podcast, what we typically do is we go back 50 years, 40 years, and 30 years, and we talk about those years in bodybuilding. We don't do like most podcasts do, where we talk about the year in review. We go back in time, since this is about bodybuilding history, right? So today we're going to go 50 years back in time to 1972. This was a two-part interview with Jerry because we had so much to talk about. But on this part of the interview, part one, we're going to talk about the AAU Mr. America, which was won by Steve Mihalik. And then we're going to talk about the NABA Mr. Universe contest, which was won by Elias Petsis from South Africa and the amateur, and Frank Zane won the professional. And then next week, when we get together with Jerry, we'll talk about the 1972 Mr. Olympia, the very controversial contest where Arnold beat Sergio, but a lot of people feel Sergio should beat Arnold. And then we'll also talk about the 1972 Mr. America and Mr. World and Mr. Universe in the IFBB. And that Mr. Universe was the famous one that was held in Baghdad, Iraq, where Ed Corney won, and that was the part of the book Pumping Iron. So that was a very eventful contest as well. All right, so it's been a couple of weeks since we've been on the show. I had some trouble getting some guests. I'm still working on that one guest. He's going to be really good. I think he's going to come up earlier. He said he wants to do it after the new year, so hopefully, keep your fingers crossed, this will be a good guest. A good bodybuilder from the 80s, if you want to guess who it is. We have not interviewed him yet. I don't think he's done any interviews. So this will be a good one. So hopefully it'll come through. I am working on my bodybuilding history book. I've been working on this for probably the last 4 or 5 months now. I've finished 15 years so far. I started in 1960 and I just finished 1973, 14 years. And now I'm on 1974. So I think I'm going to do is go up to about 1990. And this will be from the very beginning of bodybuilding, the Eugene Sandow era, all the way up until 1990. And that will be the basis for this book, which will probably be volume one. And then I guess I'll complete it one day and finish up from 1990 up to the present day. But that is going to be the book. I figure it's going to take way too long to go all the way up to modern days because it's just so much involved. But it's funny, every year I write about it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. There's more contests, there's more competitors. So I'm seeing the sport grow every year I write about it. So it's really, really interesting. I think you guys are going to love this book when it's finished. It'll be a real good history lesson for the sport of bodybuilding. Well, I think since we talked last, the Mr. Olympia took place, which was last weekend, and that was out in Las Vegas. First time they had it in Vegas in a couple of years because of the COVID thing. It's been in Orlando, Florida, the last 2 years, I think in 20 and 21. So, yeah, this is the first time it's been in Vegas since 2019. And they had a new winner in the Mr. Olympia, Hadi Chopan from Iran, who has been in third place the last few years, and now he moved up to first, and he was in great shape. He definitely deserved it. And Derek Lunsford, who is right here in Tampa, Florida, a friend of mine, and Derek went from winning the 212 Olympia last year to going into the Open, and he took second place. Very rare for a guy to take second place in his very first Mr. Olympia. And Derek maybe could have won, but I think Hadi was a little bit harder from the front, especially. But Derek is a guy to watch. He's a young guy, still in his 20s. I think he's only like 26, and he's got just incredible shape. Kind of reminds me of like a Sergio Oliva. His waist is so small, and his lats come out so wide. So a really great physique. So I hope he does it next year. That would be awesome. Third place went to Nick Walker, who was fifth the year before. And Nick is kind of a blocky physique. He kind of reminded me of Franco when he was standing there relaxed. He's just so thick with the deep abs. But he definitely made some improvements to his physique. He always is in shape. This guy is Mr. Consistency, and he is always ripped. I mean, I don't remember a pro contest, except for maybe his very first one, which was a few years ago, where he was out of shape. He is always, always in great shape. And then fourth place went to Brandon Curry, former Mr. Olympia, who has taken second place the last couple of years. So Brandon dropped down to fourth. I don't know if I mentioned this on the show last time, but I did a little history on the guys who are runner-up in the Mr. Olympia. And it's really interesting. When a guy takes second place like 2 or 3 years in a row, it never goes beyond 3 years. No one's ever taken more than 3 consecutive second place finishes. And after that second or third second place, they will either drop down, usually to fourth place. It's weird. It's like most of the time they'll drop down to fourth, or they win it. So this time, Brandon, I figured he wasn't going to win it. So he dropped down to fourth. So history repeating itself again. It's kind of weird how that works. And then fifth place was Rami, Big Rami, who was the Mr. Olympia winner the last 2 years. And he's I think he was in better condition than last year, actually. But he had the glutes and stuff. He had the abs. But his physique is kind of getting damaged. He's got some holes in his quads, which I think were from injections in his legs. It looks like his one arm was atrophied, so he might be having some nerve damage. I don't know. But the judges really punished him. This was unbelievable that a Mr. Olympia winner dropped down from first place to fifth place. The last time that happened was when Samir Banut dropped down from 1983, where he won it, to sixth place in 1984. So that's 40 years. 40 years since this happened. So credit to the judging panel that they judged what was up there, and they didn't judge him just because he's a former Mr. Olympia, and they didn't just give him the title, and they did the right thing. So good for the judges. They did the right thing. So good for them. But yeah, it was an exciting Mr. Olympia. It was fun to watch. I watched it on pay-per-view. I was not there this year, so I just stayed home. But yeah, looked like a good show. So it'll be back here in Orlando next year. So hopefully I'll be able to see it in person next year. I want to mention Thomas Klein, who made a generous contribution to the show through the Patreon page. So, Thomas, thank you very much. It really helped us out. That was a really nice early Christmas present for the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and you really did a real great service helping us there. So thank you, Thomas. I'm sure he listens to the show, so I just want to thank him publicly. And we do have some emails that I want to read. Some of them were about the Rich Gaspari interview, which was a couple of weeks ago. Fred Thomas X said, "Hey, John, I just listened to the Rich Gaspari interview. Great stuff, as always, John. I always enjoy the articles you read, too. I so remember that Stop Leaning Back, You Dildo. I laughed so hard." That's the article I read about Rich Gaspari training back at the end of our Rich Gaspari interview. So thank you, Fred. This one says, "Hey, John, always enjoy hearing an interview with Rich Gaspari. I think it's sometimes forgotten as to how good he really was at such an early age, especially when he first stormed onto the pro scene in 85 and 86, such density and condition. The interview reminded me to send you an article that I remember enjoying many years ago from the British magazine Body Power. It's told from the point of view of Frank Richards when Rich visited the UK and took Frank through a leg workout at Walter O'Malley's gym. I also send this in anticipation you might manage to interview Frank at some point. You'll notice that Peter McGuff was the editor at the time. I hope you enjoy the article. Best wishes, Matt Collinson. P.S. I've also attached a contest report by Gary Bartlett of the 1987 Detroit Pro. Mike Ashley won and was in great shape, but it was also Tom Platz's last show, if I recall, and I don't remember it being documented that widely." All right. Thank you, Matt. Yeah, I read those articles that he sent. Those were really awesome, and I will definitely read them. I want to read an article today about 1972, so maybe we'll get to it next week. But both of those articles were really great. So thanks, Matt, for sending those. I never read either one of them before because I never saw that Body Power magazine from the UK. This one says, "Hey, John, I haven't written in a bit. I've always been enjoying your podcast, especially the three-parter with Rick Wayne. What a coup. I am currently enjoying the Rich Gaspari episode as well. I'm a big fan of the Dragon Slayer from way back. The idea of Gaspari stuffing his massive physique into a suit and selling life insurance door to door after his incredible bodybuilding career made me laugh and cry at the same time. I'm so glad he quickly chose a different path. Thanks, and always keep up the awesome work. And for the love of God, don't go back to selling cars. Yeah, no problem, Andrew. That was from Andrew Heffernan. And I would definitely will not be selling cars again, Andrew. I'm going to do the online coaching, whether I make it or don't, but I'm not going back. I'm not doing any other jobs. No security, no selling cars or anything else. And this last one is from Jim Kerr. And Jim says, Merry Christmas greetings from -5 degrees Chicago. Nice interview with Joe Benda. It's nice to hear from the Mr. Americas of the past. Too bad that title is no longer the big deal that it used to be. I've been reading George Snyder and Rick Wayne's book, Three More Reps. Any chance of getting George Snyder on the show? He was in business with Arnold and Franco in a company called The Associates. Regards, Jim Kerr. Yeah, possibly, Jim. I remember when we talked to Rick, he said that George was living in Las Vegas, and I was planning on going to the Olympia this year to Vegas, so I was hoping to hook up with him and maybe interview him. So maybe I could contact Rick, and maybe Rick has some information on where George is at and how we can interview him. Also, Matt's email about Frank Richard, I'm still working on that. I haven't talked to the guy who runs his page on Facebook, but I'll reach out to him again. Because I was bugging that guy like every week for like months, and he never set it up. But it sounded like Frank might be interested in an interview, so I'll just keep trying. You never know. I tried Rick Wayne for 2 years and finally got him, so sometimes you just got to keep bugging these guys. After our interview with Jerry today, where we talk about 1972, I want to read a couple articles. The first one is from the May 1973 issue of Iron Man, and they had a writer there called Franklin Page. And Franklin used to write a year in review of all the contests and the major physiques that stood out for that year. So I thought that would tie in perfectly with this interview with Jerry. And this article is called Physiques of 72, the Year in Review. So I want to read that. And then there was another article from the September 1972 issue of Iron Man. And me and Jerry talk about this article in our interview with Steve Mihalik. Steve Mihalik wrote it. And it's called The Death of Bodybuilding, and it's about steroids in bodybuilding. So it's kind of funny how Steve said that he was natural and he was not taking any steroids at all when Steve was probably one of the biggest abusers of steroids back in the 70s. I would think he was taking more than just about anybody. So I'm going to read this article that was in the September 1972 issue of Iron Man magazine. You guys will probably find this really funny, so stick around for that. All right. Without any further ado, here is our interview with Jerry Branum, where we talk about the year 1972. And in particular, we're going to talk about the AAU Mr. America and the NABBA Mr. Universe. Here we go. All right. Welcome back to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. And we are joined again by my good friend, Jerry Branum. It is now the end of the year. And every year for the last 4 or 5 years, Jerry has joined me. And we do a recap of the last. Well, we actually go back. We go back in time. We don't do the year that just passed. Sorry, we go back 30 years, 40 years, and 50 years into the past, and we look at bodybuilding back then. So today we're going to talk about 1972, Jerry, which was 50 years ago, if you can believe it.
Right. I was actually still competing at that time. Can you believe
that?
How old were you
in 1972, Jerry?
22.
Okay, you're born in 1950. Okay.
Yeah, 22. I was still competing. I stopped competing in 74, 2 years later.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You were in California then, right?
I was in California. And, I told you the story why I stopped competing because, you know, there was no money in bodybuilding, even in the pro level at that time.
Yeah.
And, you know, I said to myself, I did an assessment. I said, the only way I'm going to get progress in competition is to take drugs. I was actually drug free when I competed, nothing.
Yeah,
nothing. Liver tablets and vitamins. That's it. I said to myself, you know, I the last couple of contests, they were not drugged. They were, you know, they weren't natural contests. They were just open. I would get like third and fourth place, and the guys that beat me were always obviously on drugs. They were harder than me, and a little, you know, not we were about the same size, but they were harder than me. They had that drug look, you know. And I said to myself one day, I said, you know, I got to make an assessment. If I want to continue to compete, maybe move on to the national level, I'm going to have to take steroids. Should I? And at that time, I had this fear of losing my hair because my my grandfathers are both completely balded by age 30. Completely. And remember, this is the 70s when long hair was in on guys. You had all these guys walking around. And I just said, nah, you know what? I like to train. I started to train for health. I'm going to just continue to train for health for the rest of my life. And I never competed again. That was in 70, after the last contest in 74. That was it.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. How extensive was drug use back then, Jer?
Nothing like today, except there was a couple of exceptions. Some bodybuilders used a lot more drugs than others. And one of them is a man that we're probably going to discuss because he won the American 72, my old buddy Steve Mihalik.
Oh, yeah.
Steve Mihalik used a lot more drugs than most bodybuilders of his time. And the funny thing about Steve is that you got to think back. He actually once issued in Iron Man magazine, he had a
notary. I was going to talk to you about that. Yeah, I got that magazine.
He had a published, I think if I remember, it was notarized. I don't remember, but
it was,
He had this statement about how he never uses any drugs. He's completely drug free. And this is the big laugh of everybody who knew Steve, because he just had almost no control, which later on, when he started to have health problems, he admitted, if you remember correctly, he admitted that he took a bunch. But at the time, he went out of his way to declare in a public bodybuilding magazine that he was probably at least one of the biggest drug users of the era. There's no question. You know,
and I'm not sure why he did that. I wonder why he did that.
Well, I met Steve at a gym in Long Island. I don't know if you've heard of a guy named Andy Bastinto.
I know Andy Bastinto, yeah.
Andy had a gym, I think in Queens at the time, if I remember correctly. And he had quite a couple of top guys training, Chris Dickinson would train there. I went there one day with my friend Dennis Tenorino to do a workout. That's where I met Steve Mihalik. And I think this is before he won the America. It had to be, because this is in the 60s before I went to California. And, and he was very cocky, and I remember – he acted like he'd already won every title on earth. I remember turning to Dennis and I said, Dennis, what is with this guy? I said, he hasn't won a goddamn thing. He acts like he has your titles. And Dennis just laughed. He said, he's not a bad guy. If you get to know him. It turned out that Dennis was right. My first impression of him wasn't good. I got to know him a little bit later and he was a nice guy. But the problem with Steve was that, he wanted to rule the world. He wanted to be like another Arnold. And, he had this crazy training system, something about insanity or something.
Intensity or insanity, yeah. Or intensity and insanity.
Yeah, and he trained John Defendis, who won the USA. It was that system. It was something like 70, 80 sets.
Body part.
I trained that way myself when I was 20 years old. And, it is insane way to train. But my theory is that he felt he needed the steroids or the drugs to recover, because he was hitting it so hard that he really needed this, or else, who knows what would he needed to support his workouts. That's my theory.
Yeah.
That's the way he took it, But unfortunately for Steve, like I say, when you get to know, he's a nice guy, really nice guy, but Steve had a real problem with depression. I remember after he won the America in 72, he came to Gold's Gym in California. And I knew him already, so we were talking, and he was telling me how he had a young son. I remember his wife, whose name I don't remember. She had just left him.
Thomasina,
that's it. Yeah, and he was telling me how Thomasina wanted a divorce, and he said he was like super depressed. He said he had to go under electroshock therapy.
Wow,
he was that depressed, And he was telling me about his son. He actually started tearing up. I really felt bad for the guy, he had this, like I said, this major depressive thing. But he would get depressed all the time. It wasn't just his wife leaving. He just had a tendency to depression. And the rest of the story eventually caught up with him. And I understand he killed himself.
Yeah, that's how he ended his life.
Very tragic, but to give him credit, Steve did towards after his bodybuilding days, when he did have some serious medical problems, I think he might have gone into kidney failure for a while. He got very thin because, remember, you have to understand, Steve was a very thin guy.
Yeah. He's,
I think I might have mentioned to you before, John, we've talked about this. Most champion bodybuilders start out as what they call ectomorphs.
Yeah.
They start out thin and build. They build upon the thin frame. And starting out as an ectomorph is a huge advantage in bodybuilding because when you're an ectomorph, you have very small fat cells and you don't have a lot of fat cells. So you can gain a lot of size without getting overly fat.
Right.
If you get a fat guy who gets into bodybuilding, they're starting out with the large fat cells and many fat cells. They can get in great shape, but it's much, much harder for them to get that really ripped, you know, appearance that wins. Steve was a very skinny guy when he started. He's another guy who built the muscle. And you can see he had a very small waist. You know, if
yeah,
you see.
Really small waist, yeah.
He did the double and he had a very nice taper. Steve said he had a 27-inch waist.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
I don't know if that's true or not, but I can tell you, I saw the man in front of me. His waist was very small.
Mm.
Maybe not 27, but because the smallest waist I've ever seen on a normal stature body, but you know what I'm about to say. Brian Buchanan.
Oh, Brian Buchanan, yeah. Okay.
Buchanan had the smallest waist I've ever seen on a full-grown.
Yeah, I don't think Steve's was that small.
No, and Brian said he had a 26-inch waist.
Okay.
Just tiny. That's like women have 26.
Yeah, right, exactly.
And I remember saying to Brian once, I said, Brian, if I had your waist, I'd walk around in the gym with my shirt off all the time. Laugh, you know. But the thing is, if we assume that Brian had a 26-inch waist by his own admission, I don't think Steve's was 27, because I can tell you, Steve's was a little bit bigger than Brian. Not much bigger. I would believe Steve having a 29-inch waist. You know, that's what Steve Reeves claimed. Reeves claimed to have a 29-inch waist.
Okay.
So he had that small waist that, you know, as I said, he was I don't remember how he did. He entered the universe, didn't he, the NABBA? I don't remember how he did it, man.
Did he go a couple years later. Yeah, not that year, but a couple years later.
I know he didn't win, though. He didn't win.
No, I think he got second to Boyer.
Okay, yeah. I wasn't at the 72 show, so I don't know if you want to talk about some of his competitors that I might know about.
Yeah. The first time I saw Steve was in the book Pumping Iron.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
They had a whole chapter where they were interviewing him, and they went into all his, you know, what he did to prepare for the 72 America.
Yeah.
And I couldn't believe this guy was Mr. America because he was so skinny. Remember, he had a shirt, long sleeve shirt on.
That's right. Yeah.
Because, you know, I was a total novice to the sport, and I was reading it. And I'm like, well, who is this guy? Why are they interviewing? I didn't understand why his pictures were even in there because he was so skinny.
And the thing that got me about that interview, when Steve was a bodybuilder, like when he won the 72 America, because of his little waist, he had very broad shoulders.
Yeah.
And if you think back to that interview in Pumping Iron, he had no shoulders.
Right. He looked like a total normal guy.
Yeah. I mean, his head looked almost too big for his body. He had little tiny shoulders.
Yeah.
He had completely atrophied, which I think he attributed to all the medical problems he had, you know, the kidney problems and this and that. But, he really, that illness just knocked him away.
I wonder when they did that interview with him in Pumping Iron, because he won the America in 72, so that had to be 73, right? He must have quit bodybuilding in 73.
I think that that was 75, because remember the Olympia that they filmed for Pumping Iron was the 70.
I mean, this, I'm talking about the book, because the book came out in 74, and they had that whole chapter.
I see what you're saying. It might have been in 73. Probably already had lost his physique, you know.
He must have lost it quick. Yeah.
I mean, maybe, again, I don't know this for sure. Maybe all that drug use and the crazy training he was doing, it just caught up with him and it screwed him up medically. He got sick.
Yeah.
And the muscles disappeared in a year. That can happen.
I know he got into that car accident where that truck rolled over his car, right? Dump truck or something. I can't believe he lived through that. But I think that was like 75 or 76.
Yeah, now Steve, unfortunately, has had some bad, you know, he had a gym in Long Island called the Mr. America Gym, I believe.
Yeah, Mr. America Gym, yeah.
You know, he's trained people like Defendus, and there was another young guy he trained, I can't remember his name.
Joey Fulco. I think he trained Joey Fulco, too.
Joey Fulco, but there was still another guy who had very big arms, I remember.
Andy Lopidotti.
Yeah, that's him, yeah. And by the way, Andy is one of the guys who influenced me to get out of bodybuilding.
Really?
I'll tell you why. I didn't know him personally, but I saw photos of him. He was like 23 years old, had these giant arms, but was already losing his hair.
Yeah.
And I looked at him, I said, and I knew that he was one of Steve's guys, and I knew he had to be taking a shitload of steroids.
Right.
And I said, wait, he's about my age, and his hair is already gone. I'm out of here. He was one of the guys that actually influenced me to stop competing. Old at 23 years age, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was a great body, but, you know, he was one of those guys, you know, a lot of it's based on, you know, male pattern bone genetics. If you have the genetics to lose your hair and you take the steroids, you're going to lose your hair unless you take a drug like finasteride or Propecia, which will stop it.
Right.
Otherwise, it's going to come out in droves, you know?
Yeah.
Of course, today that doesn't mean anything when all these bald guys walking around.
Right. Well, now people shave their heads. They want to be.
Yeah, they purposely shave that. That would have. I mean, back in the 70s, we would have looked at guys like, are you out of your freaking mind?
I know.
Everybody wanted long hair back then.
Right.
You
know? Right.
I could never grow like the long rock style, but even I had like fairly long hair.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah.
That was the style back then, you know?
Right,
I mean, I'm still, even to this day, when I see all these bald guys in the gym, I mean, just completely bald. You didn't see that at all.
Right.
The only guys who were that bald back then were older guys or guys that just had some sort of genetic problem where they lost their hair early.
Right,
it was very rare. Today, having hair is now rare.
Right. I don't even think it's attractive anymore to have hair.
Let me tell you, John, if the women start doing that, if they start shaving their heads, that's when I call Elon Musk and volunteer to go to Mars. I'm out of here.
Well, I notice a lot of the women are shaving half their heads.
I don't like that look.
No, I don't like it either.
You know, but, you know, what can you say? To each his own, right?
Well, that Mr. America contest, let's talk about that. I'm trying to see where it took place, but there was 36 competitors. It was held in Detroit.
Uh-huh.
And Steve Mihalik, as we mentioned, he won. Now, Pete Kromkowski was second.
Ah, yeah, that's right. That was Pete, wasn't he in the 71 America too, Pete?
Yeah, he took second place 3 years in a row.
Oh, okay. I remember him in 70. Wow. I don't remember him being in the 70 show. I remember him being in the 71 show.
71, 72, and 73. He got second place.
Of course, Casey won the 71 show. He was the youngest Mr. America at 19.
Yeah.
So Pete
Steve
got second.
Steve won in 72, and then Jim Morris beat him in 73.
Poor Pete. He's like.
Oh, yeah. And then he dropped out after that. He was done.
Always the bride. What's that say? The bridesmaid and never
The bride.
Pete was massive, I'll tell you, you know?
Yeah.
You ever see him when he was at his peak in bodybuilding? I don't know if you ever saw him, you know?
I never saw him in person. I've seen pictures of him, of course.
He was a huge guy. I mean,
he was so big and wide. He was huge.
He was not as cut as like the guys today, but I mean, he had extremely wide shoulders. Pete had very big, he had a beautiful delt cap, you know, and his shoulders were just freakishly wide. He had these thick slab-like pecs. His waist was a little wide, but, you know, his shoulders were so wide, you didn't really notice that much.
Right.
His legs were kind of on the mediocre side. And the thing that hurt him was his arms weren't that great when he did a double arm shot.
He didn't
have the, you know, when you look at him standing relaxed, he was like fantastic.
Yeah,
just get that what they call the surgeon of brain complex, meaning standing relaxed, they look like you'd be anywhere. But as soon as they bring their arms up, it's like their body changes into metamorphosis into something else. And he had that thing where his arms just didn't match his torso, you know. So,
the reports I read all said the same thing. They said he looked better standing relaxed, and then he Steve Mihalik looked a lot better when he was posing,
right? In fact, Arnold once remarked to me. Right around that time, around the early 70s, we were looking at pictures of Pete. And, you know, Arnold said to me, you know, it was a relaxed shot of Pete. You know, just standing there like this, you know. And Arnold says, you know, this guy could beat me. If the contest was judge relaxed, he would beat me.
Yeah.
That's what Arnold said. I said, you think so? He says, yeah. He says, but as soon as we flexed, I would destroy him.
Right. Yeah, because Arnold had that kind of body too, where once he posed, he looked way better.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Arnold didn't look that great.
You know? Yeah.
Arnold never looked that great relaxed. But when he posed,
he didn't.
When he posed, it was a whole different story. Yeah. He was just the opposite of guys like Pete.
Right, right.
And Serge, you know.
Yeah.
You know.
And then Jim Morris got third. So he was, he won it the next year, but he got third that year.
Right, right. Jim Morris. Yeah. Yeah. That's right. Did I ever tell you this? I think I told you the story about Jim Morris at the 70 America. I don't know if I told you he was. No, that was Bill Pro. The completely different story. You know, when I yelled out steroids and something like that.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
That was Bill Pro. He was talking about. He was at the on stage talking
MC.
To Mike.
Yeah.
MCing, and he was saying something about all these guys work hard. You know, they follow good nutrition practices. They train hard. And I yelled out, and they take a bunch of Dianabolus. The whole audience cracked up. I mean, the whole audience just burst out laughing hysterically. And I was in the balcony, and I swear to you, Bill Pearl looked up, and the hair stood in the back of my neck because he looked like he was looking right at me, like, shut the fuck up, Jerry. You know? I still remember that.
Oh, man. That's funny.
Yeah.
It's funny, too. But I don't know a lot of people know this, but back then when they had the Mr. America and all those national level shows, Junior America, Mr. USA, yeah. Junior Mr. USA, they always held them with weightlifting or powerlifting competitions.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but in 72, didn't they still have that athletic points? Remember that?
Yeah, I think it was still going by then in 72. Okay, so yeah.
It makes me wonder how Steve got his athletic points. That I don't know. I know he was a proficient. I can't remember. There was one sport he was pretty good in. I don't remember. Maybe he was fencing. I don't remember. He was good at one particular that might have given him his 5 athletic points. I don't remember which one it was, though.
Well, you know, I take that back, Jerry. I think they stopped it in 69, I think.
Oh, okay. So it didn't apply.
Lawyer one, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, okay, all right. Which is good for Steve, you know.
And I was doing some research on the Mr. America. It was really weird how they judged it. They didn't do, like, the placement system. They did point system. So they were supposed to give, like, so many points for muscularity, so many points for symmetry, and then they would do that interview. They would give, like, points for the interview. And then, like you said, the athletic points, there would be 5 points for that. You know, so it was really, really weird how they did it. It wasn't until 1974 that they finally went to the placement system. It made it a lot easier, you know.
Well, there was a historical event attached to that. There was a guy who won the Mr. America, not on his physique, but because he gave the best interview. Can you believe this?
Wow.
This
was who was that?
1955. Steve Klesanin, his name was.
Okay.
Was very articulate, very smart. He wasn't the best guy in the contest. He wasn't bad. Don't get me wrong. Except that for some reason he didn't put on any kind of – he didn't have any tan. He looked like a ghost. He looked like a walking corpse. compared to the other guy. The other guys all had some color in their body. But he wasn't a bad bodybuilder. But, you know, even Harry Johnson, who went on to win in 59, was in much better shape than him. Harry had a tan. He had those deep abs. He looked much better than Steve.
Yeah.
But Steve won. I couldn't believe this when I found out because they felt he would be the – can you believe this? The best representative for America. So they gave him the title in 1950. Unbelievable. So shy. They, you know, to give the guy a bodybuilding title because he gives a good interview?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Well, I think they started the Mr. America right after the Miss America started, and it was supposed to be like America's best representative of a man. Right. You know, it wasn't really a bodybuilding contest. It was more of like a...
That's right.
The male version of the Miss America contest.
Now, could you imagine if they did that today?
Oh, my God.
I mean, if they gave a lot of weight to interviews, that means I could walk into the Open Olympia and win the title. Because I could do a great interview.
Right.
I mean, my physique would be placed less than dead last.
Right.
But I could talk better than the guy, so I'd win. Right. I mean, it's insane.
It is. It's crazy.
Doesn't make any sense.
And it took him a long time to change all that. It took him a long time to get rid of the point system and to get rid of the interview, the athletic points, all that. It took like 20 years before they did it.
Yeah. I guess they meant well with that stuff, with this American, you know, well-balanced, man. But it was really ludicrous. I mean, it really had no place. It's kind of like, I haven't watched the Miss America in many years, but they used to do that with them, too.
Yeah.
I remember this guy, Bert, whatever his name is, years ago, the MC.
Bert Parks,
He'd bring out the girls in with the microphone, you know, and he'd say, this Kentucky, he says, give us your statement. And she'd say, they'd go, these lame statements. I would like to see world peace where everyone loves each other.
Right.
You know, sometimes Bert would grimace because the statement was so lame, you know.
But that always happened in Miss America too. It wasn't always the best looking woman. It was like the one with the best personality and talent portion and all that stuff, you know.
Yeah, like they held a lot of the talent part held a lot of points too.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, but I think back then, I mean, going back to 1972, I think the Mr. America, the AU Mr. America, was still the biggest amateur title in the country, right?
It was for sure. Yeah. Who else was in that America besides Jim Cohen, Jim Mars? Was there any other names that we might know?
Yeah. Well, Bill St. John was fourth. He was doing well back then.
Yeah.
Ken Covington, a black bodybuilder. He was very muscular.
I remember Ken Covington. I saw him in person a couple of times.
I think he won the Teenage America one year, but he always did good in the most muscular category, which we'll talk about in a second.
It was very ripped, Ken Covington. Not a big guy, but very great, most muscular, such a deep abs. I remember I saw him compete in Philadelphia one year, you know, right a couple of years before that. You know, he was a great guy.
And then Ron Thompson was seventh. He would go on to win it 2 years later.
One of the least publicized Mr. America.
Right. He was a surprise.
I mean, I don't even remember seeing an article other than when he won the contest. I don't remember seeing any training articles on this guy. Nothing. I mean, nothing.
Well, I actually think he did good in the competitions in that year in 72. And then in 73, he was sick. And so he did do a contest, but I think he got like ninth in the Junior America. So when he came back the next year in 74 and he won the America, nobody saw him coming because, he was sick the year before, you know.
Yeah.
But he did win the Junior Mr. America in 74 too. So,
right. Yeah.
Don Ross was eighth. We all know Don Ross. He went on to become a writer.
Old friend of mine. Yeah, Don. Yeah.
Bob Birdsong was 10th.
Oh, Bob Birdsong. That was before he went to the IFBB, obviously.
Right. Now, I was doing some research on him. I think it was in 73. He was doing all AAU shows. And he did a show. I think he went to the America, which I think was on a Sunday because they had all the lifting and stuff. So they had to do the America on Sunday.
Yes.
And he was in a contest. I don't know which contest it was, but he competed the day before on Saturday. And then he must have taken a flight out and he missed the whole prejudging of the America.
I think I heard about that. Yeah.
Yeah. So after that, he went right to the IFBB and he won his class at the Mr. America that year in 73. So he was done with the AAU because they wouldn't let him. Well, the contest was over with, really.
I think I met him right after that event when he came out to California at Vince's gym.
Yeah.
That's right. Bob, in fact, Vince spoke very highly of Bob. You know, Vince Garanda was very critical of most. He didn't like the look. I mean, today Vince, if he was alive today, seeing these guys,
he'd go nuts.
It would give him a stroke.
Yeah,
Vince was into aesthetic, small waist, small, like small ass.
Yeah,
taper, wide shoulders. You know, and this and that. Not massive legs. He didn't like blown up legs. You know,
right.
But he mentioned to me when Bob Birdsong came into the gym, he said he liked his physique. And at first I couldn't understand why, but then I realized I looked at Vince when he was competing. I looked at Bob. They had one thing in common. They were both very vascular. Bob had veins all over his upper body, just like Vince.
Vince
looked at Bob and said, "This guy's like me."
Right.
I like him. Yeah. Right. That's the reason he liked him, believe it or not.
Yeah, wow.
But Bob was just a very likable guy. Still is today, you know. Very likable, you know.
Yeah, it says Vince's gym. He says he's from Vince's gym here. So. Yeah, then they had the most muscular, and they had the body part awards there, too. Oh, you know who else was in the show? Jim Mannion was in it.
Jim Mannion. Wow.
31st.
Oh, he played 30. How many guys were in the show?
35.
Oh, so he almost played dead, almost dead last.
Yeah.
Who was the name of the guy who plays dead last, just for curiosity?
Peter McDonald.
Never heard of him. No.
Me neither.
Jim Manu, who today is the big honcho of bodybuilding.
Yeah.
Yeah. Didn't he win Mr. Pittsburgh or something like
that? Yeah, he won Mr. Pittsburgh. I think it was that year, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I remember seeing photos of Jim as a bodybuilder years ago. You know, I remember that.
Yeah, he had a pretty good physique.
Yeah. In fact, when I met him many years ago, he actually still was a bodybuilder when I met him.
Yeah.
Long ago. Yeah, he was a bodybuilder.
Yeah.
He wasn't into the official stuff yet or anything like that.
Right. That's good that he had that background, you know.
Yeah.
So the most muscular, they would always give out the most muscular at the Mr. America. And now they had some controversy. I'm sure you remember this, Jerry, in the 60s, because guys like Sergio and Harold Poole, they would always win most muscular, and they never won Mr. America.
Right.
And some people were saying that the AAU officials were racist and they wouldn't let black people win.
Right.
But I think after reading some of these articles from in the past, I think a lot of it had to do with that interview portion, because like Sergio, I don't even think he was an American citizen.
No.
And he couldn't speak English very well because he was from Cuba. Sure. So I'm sure they didn't want to give him the title, you know, because of that.
I'm sure.
And then Harold Poole, he had a stuttering problem. So I'm sure they're like, if this guy wins Mr. America and he goes, does interviews for the mass media, the general public, we're going to look like idiots because this guy stutters, you know?
Yeah. That might have entered into it, but I still think there was some sort of racial overtone there too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where, you know, because the guy who kind of dominated the AAU bodybuilding, I'm sure you're aware of this, was Bob Hoffman.
Right.
Who, you know, you had the York Barbell Company. He's the publisher of Strength and Health and later Muscular Development magazines. And Bob turned out to be quite a heavy racist. He didn't like black people and he didn't like Jewish people. He was very, very, very much, he would fit right in today with the Republican Party. but that's the way he was. And, you know, the word was that, I mean, he used to basically tell, you know, give the orders to make sure the judges don't give the title to a black man, you know.
Yeah.
In fact, a lot of people attribute Jerry Daniels, remember him?
Yeah.
His 1965 win of the American, which was held out here. He beat Sergio Lima, Bob Cage, guys that were 10 times better than him.
Yeah.
And even Sergio was just beginning his career as a bodybuilder. Yeah. He still wiped out Jerry Daniels. Jerry Daniels had nothing but big biceps. That's it. He looked like a swimmer. And, you know, but he had the look. He had the Aryan look, the blue eyes, blonde hair. Bob Hoffman liked. And, you know, the word was that Bob Hoffman said, give it to Jerry Daniels.
Yeah. I think Sergio only got seventh that year.
Yeah, yeah, he didn't do it. And, you know, John Balik was in that contest, too.
Yeah.
And there was a guy in there who became a friend of mine, a guy named, I don't know if you remember this, you got to think back, a guy named John Corvello.
Do you remember that? Yeah, he was a good-looking guy, yeah.
Very good-looking. John Corvello won the California that year in the 60s.
Okay.
And he entered the American because it was held at the Embassy Auditorium. And I got to know John years later. And he was an extraordinarily good-looking guy. I mean, this guy looked like a movie star. I used to see a lot
of magazines.
Yeah, he always had a great physique. You know, he had this type of body and face that women would go absolutely bananas over.
Mm-hmm.
And he was working as a trainer, a guy named Terry Robinson. Do you remember him, Terry Robinson was a he goes way back to the '40s. He was the personal trainer of Mario Lanza, the famous singer.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
He trained a lot of people. He had a gym in Century City, it was called, in L.A., and his chief trainer was John Corvello.
Mm.
And that's where I met John Corvello. We started talking. Just a really down-to-earth, super nice guy. I don't know whatever happened to him, but I remember saying, John, man, you should be an – because, you know, we'd go have lunch, and women in the restaurant were, like, staring at him, you
yeah.
know. I said, John, every woman in this restaurant is looking at you, man. He was such a humble guy. He would just make a joke out of it. He wasn't one of the heated guys. Just one of the nicest guys you can imagine. I don't know whatever happened to him. He was in that 65 American. I don't know. I think he placed in the top 10, but I don't know where. Yeah,
I wonder what happened to him too, because he kind of just dropped out. I don't remember him. He never won anything, you know.
No, he became a trainer, and that he never competed again. That was it, you know.
Yeah.
But this guy in person was he was like right up there with Steve Reeves with the, I'm talking about the looks and stuff.
Right.
I mean, his skin tone, very good. Just a genetically lucky guy, you know.
Yeah, he should have gotten the movies like Steve Reeves and Reg Park.
He could have easily. And he was, but the thing about John was, you know, since I did know him, he was a nice guy too. A lot of guys who are, you know, have those kind of looks, you know, they kind of stuck on themselves. They're not. He wasn't like that. He acted, was an average guy, never talked about it, nothing. You know, just a really like, you would have liked him, a nice guy. He was into the bodybuilding history like you, you know, just a really nice guy.
Wow.
I hope he's alive. I never really know what happened to him, you know, but I always wished him well. Very, very nice guy.
Did you see I interviewed Joe Abenda recently, Jer?
No, I didn't see that one.
Yeah.
Send me the link. I missed that. I didn't see that. How is he doing?
He's doing good. He's still in New York. And I guess he was self-conscious about his looks. He didn't want to do the video at all.
Oh, wow.
So we just had to do audio. So we just did the podcast.
Joe Abenda, I believe he became a lawyer.
He was a lawyer. He just retired. He just retired.
And I know, and I, again, if I remember correctly, when he got married an airline stewardess. Did he mention that? Did I tell?
I think he did. I think that's why they were able to travel so much.
Right. I told you the story about me and Joe Abenda, right, about going over his house? Did I ever tell you that story?
No.
Oh, you got to hear. This is a terrific story. You know, I was good friends with Dennis Tenorino, and Dennis Tenorino, Joe Abenda was kind of his mentor.
Right. You mentioned that. Yeah, he mentioned that.
Joe Abenda, of course, won the Mr. America in 1962. Then he won the Amateur Universe in 62. A year later, he went back and won the Pro Universe in 63. And then he was done with bodybuilding, became a lawyer, this and that. But Joe Abenda lived in a place called Astoria, Queens. And his gym was he converted the house he grew up in, he converted the garage into a weight gym. So him and Dennis would train there in the gym. So one day, I knew that Dennis was heading up to train with Joe Abenda, and even though Dennis didn't ask me to, I took it upon myself. How old was I? Something like 15 and 16. I can't remember. I took a train, a subway, to Astoria. I don't remember how I found the address, but I go there, and you know, it's this little small house there, you know, and I knock on the door, and Joe Abenda's parents, these two little Italian people, you know. They opened the door, and the first thing I said to him, I said, "Oh, I'm a good friend of Dennis Tenorino. I'm just here to like say hello to him and Joe. I never met Joe Abenda. You have to understand." And they said, "Oh, grow, Joe Denno, we loved it. Come on in, we're having dinner." I mean, today I think I was nuts for doing this. I went in, right? And I, as soon as I go in the living room, there's Joe Abenda's two Nabba. Remember the Nabba Miss New?
Yeah.
Two Nabby Universe trophies were right there above. It was in the living room on above the fireplace. So I'm sitting there with his two parents, and Joe Abenda shows up, and I'll never forget the look on Joe Abenda's face. Like Serena's mind, who the fuck are you? My mother and father. So, and he's just looking at me like really weird. Like, you know, he didn't know. And Joe Abenda's mother says, "Oh, this is Jerry. He's a friend of Denny." He goes, "He's a friend of Denny." And so Joe Abenda, you know, he just shrugged. He was not happy. He was not happy. And sure enough, about 5 minutes later, Dennis shows up, you know, and he wasn't even surprised that I was there, you know.
Right.
So, you know, so him and Joe just went in the garage, and they trained back, I remember. You know, they're doing heavy barbell rows and stuff. And I just watched him. I didn't work out. It was a small garage, so I didn't, you know, there's no room for me. So I just watched him train. But Joe Abenda never really said a word to me. I mean, he probably was not happy at all that I showed up uninvited to his parents' house and sat and had dinner with them. You know, he didn't say, Dennis introduced me. He says, "Joe, this is Jerry, my friend Jerry." And Joe comes in, and he didn't want to talk to me. You know, I wonder if he remembered that after all these
years. Yeah, I'll have to ask him. But he sounded great. I mean, he sounds really good. Yeah. He's in his 80s now.
He's got to be. I mean, assuming he was, 25 when he won in 62?
Yeah, I think he's like 82 or 83 now.
Yeah. Thank God he's still alive and healthy. Yeah.
Sounds great too. Yeah.
I hope that Red Laurel continues to live, but if Red Laurel passes away, you know, Joe Bender becomes the oldest Mr.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
But I love to hear that these guys are still alive and healthy. You know, like when you interviewed John DeCola. I was very happy to see that, you know, he looked great. He sounded great.
Yeah.
But he still looked That to me, and I think I mentioned this at the time, that is more inspiring to me personally than Hadi Chopin and all the Olympia guys.
Yeah.
To see a guy who's been training that many years, still healthy, still has muscles, still in shape, that inspires me that maybe I could do something like that.
Yeah, me too.
I can't, you know, relate to the guys who are competing, you know, but those guys like John and Joe Abenda, those I can relate to that because, you know, they're in their 80s and they're still looking good, getting good. That should inspire any man over 40.
I just heard from John a couple of weeks ago. He wants to be on the show again. He wants to come on again.
Oh, great. That's great.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
No, I like that. He was a great interview. I thought he was terrific.
Yeah.
He was one of the guys I admired in the 60s. I thought he had a great build.
Yeah. Maybe I can get you on a show with him, Jerry. We could.
Yeah, I'd love to. I remember you mentioned my name to him, and he didn't. He wasn't sure if he knew me. Actually, I think I met him only briefly. I think he competed in some show at the New York World's Fair in 64, but I'm very vague on this. I could be wrong.
Okay.
But I think he won the show, and I met him. All I did is go over and congratulate him, shook his hand, but I didn't really talk to him. So it was very brief. He looked great.
I remember the one year he won the Junior America, and then he beat the guy who won the America. Then he went to the Mr. America, and they only gave him like 7th or something. It was everybody was talking about it. They're like, "What the hell happened?" But it was because he hurt his back and he couldn't do the athletic. He didn't get the athletic points.
Oh wow!
That's why he dropped way down. So they're like, "How can this guy win the Junior America?" I think he beat Val Vasilev. That was the guy who beat
Val Vasilev.
And then Val Vasilev won the America, and he's like, "How can he beat him a month ago?" And now he beats him, and he drops all the way down to 7th. You know.
No offense to Val Vasilev, who I also met a couple of times, but I think John had a much better physique than Val Vasilev.
Yeah.
Val Vasilev was a very nice guy, by the way. I met him. Do you remember a guy named John Frisci who had a gym in Philadelphia?
I've heard the name.
John Frisci had a well-known East Coast bodybuilding gym in Philadelphia, and each year he'd put on a contest, and he'd invite famous bodybuilders from all over the country to guest pose. One year, Bill Pearl came over, and not only did he guest pose, but he blew up a hot water bottle.
Yeah.
He did a strong. He was wearing a black tank top, I remember, and black pants. And he also, I think he bent a horseshoe or tore a phone book. I don't remember what it was.
Yeah.
But that was one year. But Val Vasilev, you know, John Frisci put on his usual annual show in 1964. And again, he brought in always used to bring in the current Mr. America. And that year, of course, was Val Vasilev. And Val Vasilev showed up there. And, you know, I had actually been using Val's routine in Strength and Health magazine. I was 14. I used it at Mid-City Gym. I remember he did 18 sets of pullovers, different kinds of pullovers.
Wow.
Pullovers,
holy 18
shit. Sets, right? Anyway.
It's a hell of a ribcage.
Yeah, Val tried. He thought he looked a little like, he tried to be like an Elvis Presley. He cut a record. And it was called What You Got.
Really?
Yeah, it was called What You Got, Baby. What you got, baby. I bought his record because, you know, I was really into the bodybuilding champion. I was following the man's routine. And I met him at the contest. And I said, I remember now. This is years later. He appeared at one of these Fit Expo shows because he was selling Russian Bear product, their supplement.
Yeah, yeah.
I went up to him and I said, this is many years later. I went, hey Val, I said, I met you many years ago. I said, at John Frisci's show, the year you won the America. And I even bought your record, the one that goes, What You Got, Baby? And he went like this. He says, please don't mention that. He was all embarrassed about it. I said, it wasn't that bad. He says, keep it down. I don't even want anyone to hear it. He was cracking me. He was a nice guy, Val Vasselin.
I was surprised when I met or when I interviewed Rick Wayne that he was a big singer.
Yeah, he was. That's right.
The recording contract. Yeah.
I forgot about that. That's true. Yeah. He was.
He loved Elvis songs. He was doing the Elvis songs too.
No kidding. Wow. Yeah. I forgot about till you just mentioned he was a singer. That's true. Yeah. That's true.
Well, if we go back to this Mr. America again, the most muscular, we were talking about the most muscular man, yeah. Pete Kromkowski won it, and he beat Mihalik.
Okay, because his huge size.
Yeah, his huge size, and Jim Morris was third. Yeah. But in this was interesting. In the subdivisions, the body part awards,
right?
Mihalik didn't win anything.
Nothing, wow.
Yeah. Jim Morris won best arms, best back, and best abs.
Yeah.
Bill Sino, who was from Chicago, he won best chest. And yeah. Carl Smith won best legs.
Carl Smith, I remember, was from Kentucky or something like that, if I remember correctly. Yeah.
And Carl Smith got 13th in the contest.
Wow. You know, Bill Sino, of course, was a top power lifter.
Yeah. So he had that big chest.
Bill Sino, if I remember correctly, was a very rare, like what you call triplicate champion. In other words, he was a top-graded Olympic lifter, power lifter, and bodybuilder.
Wow.
All three. And the guy was really muscular. I remember he did a shot, you know, the shot like this. Do you remember that was on the cover of Muscular Enough? He had very deep abs.
Yeah.
Was a really pretty good bodybuilder. And for a guy, I remember thinking, wow, this guy, because most power lifters, even back then, were bulky. They didn't have any muscle definition. Yeah. Here's a guy who is a Mr. America contestant. Who was like right up there? He's like close to the world record in bench press.
He won the most muscular in 64. So
that's right.
Way back. So then he was kind of making a comeback now. You know.
Yeah. No, he was a pretty good bodybuilder, if I say so.
Yeah. He was a teacher at Eisenhower High School in Chicago.
Yeah.
Where I grew up. You know, and I remember it was one of the suburbs that was close to where I grew up.
Yeah.
Eisenhower High School was in like one of the suburbs of the South suburbs, you know. I remember when I was growing up, people would be like, yeah, Mr. Sino, he was a bodybuilder. And I'm like, bullshit, you know, I just got into bodybuilding as a teenager in high school. And then when I found out later who he really was, I'm like, wow, this guy was a real deal, you know.
Did you ever get a chance to meet him? You must have met him.
Oh, yeah. When I would hold my shows in Chicago every year, I would invite Bob Gaida, and I would invite him, and I would have him hand out trophies and stuff, you know.
Yeah.
And then I had Bill Pearl there 1 year, and they brought Sergio with them 1 year, too, before he died. So that was cool. They were all friends, you know. They all hung out in the same group.
Right. Yeah, Bill Sino passed away a couple of years ago, if I remember correctly.
No, he's still alive. Bob Gaida passed away.
You sure about that? I could have sworn. We'll see. Oh, okay. I know about Bob Gaida. Still hanging in there. Oh, good for him. Okay.
Yeah.
He's got to be up in his 80s, too.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, for sure. Oh. Yeah. I haven't talked to him in a while, so I hope he's doing good.
Yeah, that's great.
You want to talk about the NABBA Mr. Universe, Jer?
Yeah, let's go to the NABBA.
We just talked about the Mr. America.
Yeah.
So the NABBA Universe in 72 was won by Elias Petsis. You remember him from South Africa?
I sure do. I remember him. He had a fairly short guy, nice physique, pretty good upper body, passable legs, not great legs, though.
Yeah.
I do remember him. Yeah, he had good abs, really good abs.
Pretty muscular, though, right?
Yeah, very muscular. Nice, very good deltoid muscles, too. Good deltoids.
I believe Elias was second to Chris Dickerson the year before in 71.
Right.
And then Chris was not in the show in 72. He took that year off, and then he came back in 73, and he won it.
Right.
But so Elias ended up winning the short class, and he won the overall. So
yeah,
it was probably his biggest victory ever in his life.
Was Colombo in the show that year?
No. We're going to talk about that, too, because it seems like the guys like Arnold and Franco and Zane was in it, but Arnold and Franco particularly – they went over now to the IFBB, and they were just competing there. And this was, I think this was the year where that division was. Remember, this was the year that Weider started that rule, you know?
Right, right, so okay.
Now you're going to start to see a lot of these guys in the NABBA universe were separate from the IFBB, where before they used to change and everybody used to do the same thing, you know?
Right, right.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of sad, just a little commentary here. I remember, because when I first got into bodybuilding, the NABBA Universe was a big thing. That was the ultimate contest. I mean, Bill Pearl, Steve Rees, Reg Park, some of the greatest bodybuilders ever had won that show. And, you know, there was no internet back then. You know, you only had the bodybuilding magazines. Everybody in bodybuilding knew who the current NAB and Miss Universe, both the amateur and the professional, were.
Yeah. But
over the years, with the advent of the, you know, IFBB and all this stuff, the NAB universe went down to, like, I know it still exists, but, I mean, if you put a gun to my head, I couldn't tell you who won the last 10 NAB universe. I have no idea.
I didn't know it was still going.
I think it's still going, but it's like no publicity. Maybe in England, you know, where the contest is held.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know, they don't have health and strength, man. That used to be the main organ of the NAB, you know, because
they used to promote it. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, because the editor in chief was Oscar Heidenstam.
Yeah.
Who ran the NAB contest. But, you know, health and strength went out years ago. So I don't know how much publicity it gets in England, but here it gets no publicity. Of course, the magazines are mostly gone. Wow. Mm-hmm. But you don't even see anything on the end. I don't even see anything on the internet about it.
I never do. No.
The last I heard mention of any NABBA contest was Doug Brignoli was planning shortly before his death, was going to pose at a NABBA contest. Now, I don't think it was the universe. And then he had planned to enter some senior division next year. Of course, you know, he passed away, sadly. But, I mean, that's the only time I ever hear NABBA mentioned. I don't hear nothing. Wow. It's like dead, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Sad. It's kind of sad. It used to be the biggest thing.
I know, isn't it? It was so big for so long. It started in 1950.
Yeah.
And, I told you I'm writing this book about the history of bodybuilding. So I'm going over every year.
Yeah.
And, man, that was the biggest contest. I mean, the AU Membership was the biggest amateur show in the country. Right. And then the NABBA Universe was the biggest. And then the IFBB was just starting to get big in the early 70s. But before that, the IFBB looked like amateurs next to the NABBA Universe.
Nothing. But, I mean, the what was I going to say? Muscular Development, you know, when it was owned by York Barbell, I remember, came out with an issue around, I think it was the early 60s, where they had the whole magazine was devoted to all the NABBA Miss Universe. Mm. They didn't even have any articles. It was just full-page pictures of every guy. Bill Pearl was in it, and Reg Park, all Steve Rees, all the guys who had won the NABBA Universe up to that point. I remember the whole issue. That's how big the NABBA Universe was.
Yeah. Whenever I've talked to Boyer Coe, he talks about how prestigious that show was. And I think he's more proud of winning that title than any of the other titles he won.
Well, it was considered, before the Mr. Olympia, the Mr. Universe was considered the ultimate bodybuilding title.
Yeah.
You know, even whether it was amateur or pro.
Yeah.
It was considered that was it. That was the ultimate title you could win. In fact, Bill Weider, I remember him telling me, he said he created the Olympia because he felt that, you know, guys who had won the Universe in the America, they had nowhere to go after winning that. And, you know, he felt that they needed a venue to compete. So he, you know, the famous story, he was sitting in a restaurant and they had Olympia beer on the table.
Yeah.
he didn't mention that to me, so I don't know if it's true.
But
he did tell me that's why he created the Olympia, because these guys had, you know, he wanted to have, a venue where the top guys like Larry Scott, who had already won the American Universe, where they would have a, and of course, Chuck Sipes, who had won the IFBB America, they would have another contest to compete in. That's why he created the Olympia.
But it's interesting to note also that as far as history goes, the AAU America was the first Mr. America, and then the IFBB created their own Mr. America.
Right, that's
right. And then the NABBA Universe was really the first Mr. Universe, and then the IFBB kind of stole that too. They had their own version of Mr. Universe. So,
you know, it's
then when Dan Lurie came along, he was starting his own Mr. America. So everybody was using the same titles, but the original one was AAU and NABBA.
The AAU. And the interesting thing about that was there is still to this day a controversy about who the first AAU Mr. America is.
Right, because they had two in the same year. Yeah.
Some people say it was Ronald Essemaker.
Yeah.
The other ones say it's Burt Goodrich.
Yeah.
So I don't, most of, from what I understand, the majority seem to go with Ronald Essemaker as being the first actual AAU Mr. America. I'm not really sure how that works, but
yeah.
That's still, after that, though, it was there was no controversy. John Grimmick won it the next year in 40. He won it in 41. And he won it 2 years in a row. And
they made the rule.
rule that you can't win the Mr. America more than once, because Grimmick was so dominant, they thought he was on and on and on. So, you know. So
Joe Abenda told me that he was born on July 4th, on 1939, the day of the first Mr. America.
Is that right? Wow.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. You know what Abenda's strength was, what his why he won contests? You know what his strength was?
No.
His back.
Mm.
He had a really good back. He had muscle all over his upper back and the middle back.
Okay. You know,
he would turn to the back and do a kind of shot with the arms out like this.
Yeah.
And he had a really nice detailed back. Mm. And that was, even back then, that was kind of rare.
Yeah.
So, you know, his upper body was good. And his legs were mediocre. His upper body was pretty, he had good pecs, you know, fairly decent arms, but he won on the back.
Mm, okay. He won
on the basis of his back. And strangely enough, to this day, if you think about it, the back probably plays more of a role in winning the Mr. Olympia than any other muscle group.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you think about it, Lee Haney always won on Dorian Yates. I mean, it seems like more weight is given to the back development for the simple reason that it's, and I think you'll know this is true, it's very hard to develop a super detailed back.
Yeah.
It's almost like a genetic thing. You know what I mean? You could do all the rows, all the chins, all the pull downs, but unless you have a certain level of genetics to allow you to get that kind of like, you know, definition everywhere, like Fritz Wheeler had, and Samir Benoit was a great example of that, you know, Arnold to a lesser extent. Unless you have that, this you're not going to get it. So the guys that have it, or the guys that can't get it, they lose to the guys that can get it. As soon as they turn to the back, it's all over.
Yeah.
You know, so I remember when, what was it, 90, was it 91 Olympia, when it was very close between Haney and Dorian. That was Dorian's first Olympia.
Yeah.
And I remember, what's his name, Wayne D'Amelio came up to me after the prejudging, and he said to me, there's going to be a new Mr. Olympia this year. And remember, Haney had won it, what, 7 years in a row, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I said to myself, who's going to beat Lee Haney? And I said, is he talking about Dorian Yates? Dorian's great, but he's not going to beat Lee Haney.
Yeah.
And I was sitting with a guy you just mentioned, Don Ross, at the night show, and they all lined up on stage. And sure enough, from the front, Lee Haney and Dorian looked comparable.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, like Lee was a little bit wider, had thicker torso, but Yates had the legs on him. Definitely had the legs on him.
Yeah. You know,
and the shoulders too. But I said to my, I leaned over to Don. I remember saying, "Watch what happens when they tell him to turn to the back." I said, "This is when Lee's going to win. Watch and see." Sure enough, a minute later, turn to the rear. They all turned to the rear, and I mean, don't get me wrong, Yates had a great back. His back got much greater in the years after that.
Yeah.
But that year, Lee Haney's back was perfection. It was wide, it was thick, and he had that detail everywhere, top to bottom. And that's when he won, right there. That's when he won.
Okay.
After that, you can see, by the way, they brought the guys out, that Lee Haney had won.
Yeah.
Yep.
I want to mention something else about that Nava Universe. When I was interviewing Boyer last time, he was talking about a bikini girl he's seen at his gym.
Yeah.
And she was telling him that she spent all this money to compete. You know, like she did a national level contest, and it was like, I think it was $200 to enter, plus the suit, plus the hair, plus the makeup. Yeah. Plus the tan. She was spending like almost $1,000 to go in the show. And I asked Boyer, I said, what did they charge you guys to enter the Nava Universe? He said they didn't charge us anything. It was free.
We
had to sign they had to put in an application. They had to make sure they were eligible to compete. They had to be a contest winner.
Right. But
there was no cost. And I'm like, how did Oscar Heidenstam make any money? And he said, well, it was sponsored by the magazine. That was it.
That is so sexist and wrong to charge the women. And the women don't even get the recognition that the guys do.
Right.
That is so wrong to do that.
And let me
tell you, if you think back, I don't know if you see any photos, but some of the women that won, what was it called? Miss Bikini or something like that?
Miss Bikini. Or
some of those women were, to me, were drop dead gorgeous.
Yeah.
I had a crush on a couple of them, to be honest. I was a kid. I remember asking Arnold about one of them. There was one of them. You got to look back at the photos. She had dark hair. She won the Miss Bikini when he won one of his NAB universes. And I said, Arnold, I said, my God, that girl is one of those beautiful women I have ever seen. I said, how well do you know her? And he goes, I know a lot. I know her much. What do you say? Much greater than you could possibly imagine. He laughed and walked away. I took that to mean that he got her in bed.
Right.
But she had this like hourglass figure, very feminine with a small waist.
Yeah.
Beautifully shaped thighs, not muscular, but a woman's beautiful. I mean, geez, this girl was a movie star looks. I'm telling you. What you just told me, I never knew, and that's shocking.
No, I think he misunderstood me though, Jared. He was talking to a girl who competes today.
Oh.
Yeah, like a young girl he saw in the gym, and she was telling him like what it costs to compete. And then Boyer said when he'd competed in the NABBA Universe and the Mr. America, there was no entry fee at all.
Oh, so maybe the women didn't have to pay anything.
Yeah, I don't think they did. No.
Okay, then that's all right. Well, it's still not right though. It's still not. But then again, look what they.
But it's just amazing, like what you pay in entry fees now. And he said back then they had no entry fees.
I mean, if you look at what these pros have to pay to compete, they got to pay an IFBB membership. They got to pay entrance fee. And there's like one or two other fees or something like that. It's crazy,
Well, when you're a pro, you don't have to pay an entry fee, but all the amateurs, that's where they make all the money,
Okay, I didn't know that. Okay.
That's what I was asking Boyer. I was like, how did Oscar Heidenstam make any money if nobody was paying any entry fees,
Well, I guess he got the, whatever the people paid to see the contest there.
The audience and then the sponsorship,
Do you remember the year that I think it was Boyer probably might have mentioned this one? J. Paul Getty awarded him the NAB Universe. J. Paul Getty came on.
Yeah, stage. I think that was.
He was the world's richest man at the time.
Yeah.
And he was a real bodybuilding aficionado.
He used to go every year, right? Yeah.
Yeah, he used to go every year, and he trained. He actually hired as a trainer when he was a younger guy, a famous British trainer weightlifter named W. A. Pullum. Pullam, who trained J. Paul Getty in weightlifting and bodybuilding and weightlifting. He showed him cable exercise. Yeah, Getty was really into it. He was really into bodybuilding. He
probably contributed some money.
and judging by recent photos of Elon Musk with his shirt off, I would suggest that he also consider getting into bodybuilding.
Right.
He's got one of the worst freaking bodies I've ever seen.
Right, I saw that picture.
I mean, he looks like a big tub of cheese.
Right.
He doesn't have pecs.
Like a guy who's been sitting in front of the computer for 60 hours a day.
He doesn't have any pecs. There's just nipples. There's no sign of pectoral. Forget about abdominals. No chance.
Right.
I mean, what a terrible physique. Jeez. Yeah. And the fact that he was just pale as a ghost didn't help either.
Right.
Although he commented, but he said something about the lighting was bad, just give me good lighting and I'll look like Mr. Olympia. No, I don't think so, Musk.
The sunlight was bad. Let's get back to the contest. The medium class was won by Lars Lund from Norway.
Yeah, I remember him. Lars Lund was a big guy.
Big arms, right?
Yeah. He's still around.
Is he really?
Yeah, I think I see a couple of posts from him on Facebook.
Huh.
Yeah, he's still around. Yeah.
So Warren Frederick was second and Bill Grant was third.
Oh, yeah. Well, of course, Bill Grant's an old friend of mine. And Warren Frederick, that's the guy, the story I told you about how he showed up at my first bodybuilding
contest, right?
In 1965. Novice Mr. Wagner, it was called, held to the Wagner Recreational Center in Harlem. Was mostly teeny. That was also Lou Ferrigno's first contest about a year later.
Was it really? Okay.
And we're all milling around backstage and so we were teenagers, none of us had any muscle. I was 15 years old,
Yeah.
But it wasn't big. And all of a sudden we see this guy come up and I right away I knew there was something wrong because even though he's wearing street clothes, I could see this guy, I asked one of the guys, I said, who is he? Is he going to be like a guest host or something? So the guy says, I don't know. So he strips down, and of course, Warren Fredericks was, looked like a pro bodybuilder. He was vascular, thick pecs, and these huge delts. And they said he was going to compete. I said, wait a minute, I just saw him compete in the Mr. America. How can he compete in a novice contest?
Right.
But you know what? Believe it or not, because I grew up in an atmosphere like in New York where you can't be a rat. You can't turn people in. You got to keep your mouth shut no matter what. Yeah. I didn't say anything. I just was angry. I said, if they let this guy in, it's really unfair. I remember saying that. And sure enough, somebody else turned him in, or the judges recognized him, and he was kicked out before the contest began. That son of a bitch tried to sneak into a novice contest.
He was competing in all the organizations. He did all the shows.
Yeah.
No, he did IFBB, NABBA. He did WBBG.
He would jump into every contest.
Yeah.
Even a novice. The man had he might have even already won the Lurie American. No, I think it came years later. No, because this was 65, so it was years later. I mean, but he had already competed in some big contests, and they were not novice. I recognized it.
It's interesting at this show, the 1972 NABBA Universe, because Warren Frederick, Bill Grant, and Lou Ferrigno were all in the WBBG Pro Mr. America that was held in New York that Dan Lurie promoted. And Dan Lurie sent all three of those guys over to London.
Right. I remember that. I do remember.
So I can't remember. I think Bill Grant won it. Let me check.
Yeah, he won it that year. That was him.
Yeah, so Bill was the winner. And Lou was second, and Warren Frederick was third.
Right. I'll tell you a funny story about that. I brought my I knew Bill. I had met him in 70. So I already was friends with the guy, right? So that was all in New York, that show, of course, the WBG. And I think it was at Hunter College, if I remember correctly. I don't remember. But my mother used to like to go to shows. She used to like Broadway shows, off-Broadway, any kind of show. And so, I told her I was going to a bodybuilding show. She said, I'd like to come. I said, Mom, it's not a Broadway show. Believe me, you're not going to be interested. This guy's with grease all over their body wearing trunks. She says, no, I want to go anyway. So we go to the contest and she's netting, and Bill Grant wins. And when he won, he fell to the floor and started sobbing, crying.
Yeah, that's right? What I read. I read that, yeah.
So on the way home, we took a subway back home to Brooklyn. My mother says to me, is that the way it always works? I said, what do you mean? She says, do the guys always cry like that and go when they win? I said, no, Mom, it's kind of rare. I said, in fact, I've never seen it before. I told Grant this story. He loved it. He laughed his head off.
Yeah, I guess Bill was doing the AAU for a couple of years and he never even came close. He felt like this was winning the Mr. America for him.
Yeah. In fact, I met him. That's where I met him, at the 70 America.
Dickerson won.
Yeah, he got something like 12th or 13th in that show.
Yeah.
And he had those great abs.
Yeah.
Zabo Kazuski, the chief,
Yeah.
The original Gold's Gym, Zabo said, Zabo comes up to me and says, this guy, Bill Grant, really got ripped off. I said, what do you mean, chief? He says, he should have been higher. And then I'm thinking, why would he say? And then I said, the abs.
Yeah.
Abel loved abs because that was his thing. So, because of Grant's abs, he thought he should have been. And so I see Bill Grant in the gym with, I forgot the name of the guy he was training with, his old friend from New Jersey. And I went up to him. He was at the chinning bar, I remember. And this is the first time I met him. And I said, hey, Bill, I said, I just wanted to, my name's Jerry Brainham. I just saw you, in the American the other night. I said, I really do think you should have played hard. In fact, Zabo thinks you should have won. So, Grant goes, yeah, thanks. And he kind of turns his back and walks away. And I'm thinking, what's with this son of a bitch? He was still pissed off. I gave him a compliment. And of course, we became really close friends. We're still friends after all these years. Very inauspicious start,
Right.
Because he was just really pissed about his placing,
Yeah, I've been there before. I know what that's like.
Yeah,
Well, in this show, Warren beat Bill. Bill got third. Warren got second.
Right.
And Lars Lund won. And then the tall class, Paul Grant from the United Kingdom won.
Yeah, from Wales.
Lou Ferrigno was second. So how old was Lou in 1972? He was like 20, 21 years old, right?
Yes, he would be 21 years old. Yeah.
Wow. He was really young.
I remember Paul Grant. He came out to California, trained at the original Goals. You could see a couple of scenes in the movie Pumping Iron. He's walking around in there.
He was in the universe, too.
Yeah, he was in the universe. I even said for his course, he sold a course about how to get, I don't remember the title, it was something to the extent of how to get ripped or something like that.
Yeah.
And he was very muscular. He had, you know, great abs and stuff. I sent for his, it wasn't a bad course. It was just the same old stuff, you know.
Yeah.
I spoke to him a couple of times at Gold's Gym. Very nice guy. Really nice guy. He had one of those guys that had a really nice delt development. Bicep tricep was mediocre, but really nice delts. He had a nice cap of the delts, and he had good calves too. Very good calves.
Yeah, a lot of the articles I read from back then, they said he was really muscular. So he must have been much more muscular than most guys were back then, you know.
He was much more muscular than most guys. And sadly, I heard later on he died of a kidney failure.
Yeah. He always had that kind of a wider waist, right? The thicker waist.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right. Yeah. A wider waist. Very deep abs, but a thicker waist. That's very true. Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
I was thinking with Lou placing second, you know, how he always admired Arnold. Arnold was second when he was 19 years old to Chet Yorton at the NAVA Universe. So now Lou goes in the NAVA Universe. I think he was 20 at the time, and he was second. So it was almost like the same thing Arnold did, you know?
Right. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. But
Lou was huge for back then. I mean, 6'5". It's funny how Lou was kind of skinny as a teenager. And then when he gets to the like early 20s, he was huge all of a sudden. He just got so big so fast.
Well, what happened, after I moved to California, you know, when Lou, I trained at a gym called R&J Health Studio in Brooklyn. And back in the late 60s, I was training there with a guy named Pete Caputo.
Yeah.
And Lou came in one day. He had thick glasses on. He was thin. He came in with his father, Matt. And I remember Pete and I were doing crunch sit-ups. You know, Pete had learned that from Vince Guaranda coming out to go.
Yeah.
He was peppering me with questions, this Lou Ferrigno, one after another, you know, and I was trying to help him. And I'd see him along the line, you know, in the street after that. And then, you know, a couple of years later, I had already moved out to California. I came into New York. And when I come to New York, I'd always go back to R&J. That's where I trained when I was in New York. So I walk into the gym, and there's this guy doing bench presses. And he says, "Hey, Jerry, how you doing?" And I'm looking and I'm thinking, who the hell is this guy? And he could see that I didn't recognize him. He says, "It's me, Lou." The reason I didn't recognize him was he looked like he was about 300 pounds. I mean, he was huge. He was 10 times the size the last time I saw him.
This was 1 year later, Jerry?
It was about 4 years later.
Oh, 4 years later, okay.
And I said, "What did you do, man?" He says, "I've been drinking a lot of milk." That's what he told me.
What do you think it was? Just his, like, puberty just hit?
Yeah, he just grew into it, you know.
Yeah.
He's very enthusiastic, you know, and he just grew into it, you know. Big guy.
I got a lot of these old Iron Man magazines, and you could see, like, right around this time, 71, 72, when he was just coming in, they actually did a whole article about him. And you know what they called it?
What?
The Incredible Lou Ferrigno. I was like, you got to be kidding me. That's crazy.
Wow. Is that something?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow, talk about foretelling the future.
I know.
Yeah. No, he just grew into it. He was a thin, again, guy started out thin.
Yeah.
And just built up. You know, that's the way most champion bodybuilders are.
Right.
Nine out of 10 of them are like that.
Yeah.
You started out thin yourself, didn't you? You were thin,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I was 135 pounds.
Almost every champion body, you'll find that they start out and they pack on the muscle.
It's
just something I've noticed over the years. You very rarely see, I can only think of one or two guys that were big, fat guys that were successful in bodybuilding. And you might include Bruce Randall, who won the Universe in 59, but see, he started as a fairly thin guy, and he purposely put on a lot of weight when he was in the Army. He went up to 405 pounds and was lifting extremely heavy weights. And then he took 2 years to trim down, went all the way down to 196, then back up to 220, and he won the 59 Universe.
Yeah.
He lost the 58 contest to Reg Park the year before. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, he, again, was not fat when he started.
Yeah,
he got very bulky. He had a big stomach when he was 405.
Yeah.
But that was artificial. The man was eating 3 dozen eggs a day and drinking 3 gallons of milk for crying out loud for breakfast. You know, I purposely wanted to gain that weight.
Yeah, you make a good point, because if you're skinny and then you gain weight, you're not going to get fat, even though you might get, like, I remember I was so skinny, like not so skinny, but I was 135. And then as a teenager, I remember I was always underweight. I mean, I was competing in teenage shows, but I never felt like I was too skinny. I needed more mass, you know?
Right, right.
And then I didn't finally get big until I was like 21, when I was bulking up. But even when I was bulked up, I didn't feel like I was fat. I had fat on me, but I didn't feel like fat. You know, I just felt like I was bulky, like big, you know?
Yeah. See, that's the difference, because you started as thin.
Yeah.
You had smaller and fewer fat cells.
Right.
So yeah, when you gain all weight, you gain a little bit of fat. But now contrast this with another guy who starts out fat. He's got the enlarged fat cells and numerous fat cells. If he does what you did, bulk up, he's going to look a lot fatter. I mean, he's going to look obese.
Right, right.
That's the difference. See, you know, it's really...
That's like if I now tried to bulk up, I'd look fat because I got all the fat cells for my life.
That happens with everybody. I mean, you know, metabolism changes a little as you get older, you know.
Right.
But, you know, I remember Dennis. You mentioned Dennis earlier. I remember Dennis when he was competing, he just was able to eat whatever he wanted. You know, I saw him a week before he won the USA, leaving Nathan's Famous at Coney Island, eating a hot dog with a big greasy bag of French fry.
Yeah.
I said, Dennis, when's your next contest? He says, next week. I said, what? I said, why are you eating that shit? I said, you can't eat that. He says, doesn't bother me. He goes like that, you know. And then later on, you know, I remember when he went to the IFBB, I asked him about that. I said, Dennis, do you still eat the greasy? I can't do that anymore, Jerry. Can't do it. I got to die like everybody else.
Right.
I still remember, you know, catches up with you, you know.
Oh, yeah. The good old days are over.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about the Pro Navi Universe, Jer. That was won by Frank Zane.
Yeah.
So Zane won the Amateur Universe in 70. Remember when Arnold won the Pro, and they had that famous picture of Frank and his wife, Christine, and Arnold.
Yeah. Right.
So this was 2 years later, because Frank came back in 71. And remember, he lost to Bill Pearl.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's,
and he was really mad because they didn't compare him.
Yeah, that's the story you told me that they – But also when they told Bill Pearl to turn to one angle, he said, no, I'm not going to do that.
Right. Yeah.
That was a hilarious story.
Yeah, I mean, he looked at the judge and he said, don't be difficult.
I mean, only Bill Pearl could get away with something.
Right.
Like that. Because they loved him in England. He was like he get away with that, you know?
So Frank beat Boyer Coe and Tony Emmett in the short class.
Tony Emmett. I remember Tony. Tony came to California too. Nice guy. Very nice guy. Quiet guy. Tremendous. Oh, my. You got to see his abs in person. Extremely deep abs. He had big obliques, but still beautiful abs. Beautiful abs. Good calves. Very nice guy. Very nice guy, Tony Emmett.
Yeah, so the story I read was Tony was kind of just starting his bodybuilding career, but the reason he went into the pro division was he was a gym owner, I think, in England. That's what they considered a pro, was if you made money from the sport and anything related to fitness.
Wow.
Not that you were a professional, so to speak, because there really were no professional bodybuilders back then. But because he was a gym owner, he had to compete in the pro division.
I see. But, you know, that doesn't make sense when you think about it, because you have a guy like Chris Dickerson, to give an example.
Yeah.
He wins the Amateur Universe, NABA, and then he comes back, what is it, a year or two later, and he wins the pro division, pro. Right?
Right.
Well, what did he do that would make him a pro? I mean.
No, I think he won the amateur in 73, and then he won the pro in 74. So yeah, after you win the Amateur NABA Universe, then I guess you have to go on to the pro.
Oh, so it's just automatic.
Because I don't think anybody, I might be wrong, but I don't think anybody won the amateur a few times in a row, right? Because they would just go to the pros. Yeah.
No, you have it right. You can only win the amateur once, then you could win the pro, you know, repeatedly.
Or like multiple times, like Arnold.
Or what's his name? The guy from Lebanon, Kowak.
Kowak, yeah. He won like five times.
Five times that guy won. Isn't it amazing when you think about it, John? Here's a guy, Kowak, who won the just dominant in the NABA universe.
Yeah.
And he did do crap in the IFEB.
Right.
Nothing.
Never did anything. Never even made top five, I think.
Yeah, it amazes me.
Yeah.
And he, another nice guy. I remember we went in the 80s when they had the Grand Prix Tour. You know, he had a Jimmy had just opened in Nice, which was in Cannes, France. And he wanted to show people his gym. He was very proud of his gym. He went up to all the bodybuilders to compete. Nobody wanted to go. But I said, Eduardo, I'll go with you. You know, so we went to took it in a car. I don't remember if it was his car, or at least I don't remember whose car it was. We took a short trip to Nice. I expected it. Don't ask me why, but I expected it to be kind of this dumpy, shitty gym. I didn't expect it. I walk into this beautiful freaking gym. I remember all the machines had red upholstery, and it was just, I mean, great gym.
Yeah.
And I said, Eduardo, I said, I'm really shocked. I mean, I didn't expect the gym this good. He says, thank you very much. He says, and then he goes, are you hungry? Remember, he was competing the next day in a contest. He says, how do you feel? You hungry? I said, yeah. He said, I know a good pizza place up the street. I said, wait a minute, Eduardo. I said, you can't eat pizza. You have a contest tomorrow. He said, don't worry about it. So we went and shared a large pizza together. He enters the contest the next day, did not win, looked great. No water retention, no fat, nothing, abs, deep as you can get.
Yeah.
I mean, amazing guy. And very nice. He was such a nice guy. He was like a little kid. He was so enthusiastic.
Yeah, I remember you telling me that. Yeah.
But just such a sweet guy. I felt so bad when I heard he died in late 40s, got a heart attack.
Mm.
Very nice. I remember meeting his wife. He had a nice little wife. He, you know,
yeah,
just a really nice guy.
Yeah.
Nice
guy. Well, your buddy Dennis Tenorino won the tall class.
Yeah, Dennis. Yep. Yeah.
So it was. It looked like it was Zane Boyer and Dennis were probably the top three, I would guess. You know.
Yeah.
But I think that was one of Frank Zane's best conditions, because I talked to Wayne Galash from Australia, and Wayne was. I think Wayne was judging the contest,
mm-hmm.
and he was also taking pictures and stuff. And he told me that he said once Frank came out, he goes, I knew he won it. He said he looked fantastic. And
yeah,
then I guess he shot a video with Frank in a park. So
I saw that.
Yeah, that famous park in London that a lot of people did photo shoots and stuff.
Does Wayne think he looked better at that show than he did when he won the Olympias?
No, he said it was a different physique, but he said up until that point, that was the best he looked.
Oh, yeah, I agree with that for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he said he got much more ripped when he won the Olympia. But
right, yeah.
But Nava always liked that symmetrical aesthetic physique anyways, and that's what Frank had, you know.
Yeah. Well, they had in those days, they had something called the European physique.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The European physique was always marked by very good abdominal development.
Yeah.
Not a lot of muscle everywhere. But kind of a balanced physique where all the muscles you had, you know, the calves, the thigh, they were all in very good proportion. So the big thing was having symmetry and proportions and always having very good abdominal development. You'll never see a guy win those days who didn't have good abs. It just didn't. That was, they used to call that the European style physique back then.
Yeah. They like Dickerson's physique, and Boyer did very well too in the Navi universe back then.
Yeah. But Boyer always entered in shape. I mean, the guy.
Yeah.
I never saw him out of shape.
I know.
Even when he went to the IABB, he was like, he was always in the best shape he could get in.
Right, right.
You know, he obviously knew what worked for him, you know?
Yeah. Boyer was really good, too, for his age, you know? He was a young guy when he was winning a lot of those titles in America.
Right. Yeah. I remember your interview when he said something about, he had he just didn't really have posing trunks in his first contest.
Yeah.
I can't remember. Would he go either in his underwear or somebody borrowed
swimming trunks? I think they're swimming trunks.
He borrowed somebody's swimming trunks. Funny.
Yeah. So Boyer was another guy that would do all the different organizations. He did AAU, he did NAVA. Because I'm looking, he won the WBBG Pro Mr. World that year.
I remember that.
Yeah, he did a lot of Dan Lurie shows.
Right, right.
I think he won that Pro Mr. World like five times in a row.
Dan Lurie won?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know he won it that many. Wow.
Yeah, I think he won five times in a row. It was crazy. Wow. All right, thanks for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thank you to Jerry Branham for joining us again. It's always great talking to Jerry. And as I said, we will talk to Jerry next week, which will be New Year's Eve, right? New Year's Eve, New Year's Day, that weekend. And we will talk to Jerry next week about the rest of 1972. We'll talk about the 1972 Mr. Olympia and the 1972 IFBB Mr. America, Mr. World, and Mr. Universe. So that should be a great conversation as well. All right. Let me get to these articles. I got two articles I want to share with you guys today. This first one is from the May 1973 issue of Iron Man magazine. This is when Perry Rader was the publisher, of course, the smaller Iron Man. And it's called The Physiques of 72, The Year in Review by Franklin Page. And it talks about all the competitions. So I thought it would tie in perfectly with what we just talked about with Jerry. So let me get to this article right now. It says, over the last couple of years, we have seen the forming of four definite stables of physique stars with a certain amount of give and take between them, each tolerating to a limited extent the other's projects. But there have also developed intense rivalries and, in some instances, active boycotts of rival contests and specific efforts to prevent bodybuilders from competing freely. In most cases, these efforts have been successful, but only at the expenditure of a great deal of money on the part of the restricting sponsor. Physique competitions have become big business, which means that it is allied with strong commercial interest. We all know the confusions and frustrations resulting from the situation, to say nothing of the hard feelings and recriminations. But on the other hand, there is more general interest in bodybuilders today than there's ever been. It's also an exciting situation for the bodybuilders themselves. The owner of a red-hot physique can easily find himself in the eye of a storm of competition among sponsors for his services, and the recipient of not only paid trips to contests, but cash for the use of his name in publications, on the bylines of ghostwritten articles, and for photographic sessions. He also gets expense money and, in some cases, a retainer fee. He can also suddenly find himself without any of these benefits when an even hotter physique is available. A few men in the professional ranks have kept their heads and really made a profit from their associations, for a time at least, but it takes a bit of doing. The four stables are those sponsored by the internationally recognized associations that organize contests. They are the International Federation of Bodybuilders, the IFBB, the World Bodybuilders Guild, the WBBG, the Amateur Athletic Union, AAU, and the National Amateur Bodybuilders Association, or NABA. All but the last are headquartered in the USA. NABA is currently centered in England, but actually began the whole idea of physique competition on an international scale 24 years ago when NABA organized the first Mr. Universe contest anywhere. They must all be considered international now since they all compete for international stars. Even the AAU launched itself into the international physique competition scene 2 years ago with its Mr. World contest, but in 3 years, it has not developed into anything of consequence. Lest this imply undue denigration of the AAU and its physique contest, let me say that at once, in my opinion, the AAU still offers the most upcoming American bodybuilders. And after all this preamble, I want to say now that by far the most significant contests worldwide are still the AAU Mr. America and the NABA Mr. Universe. The others produce exciting and glamorous shows, but nobody yet has been able to challenge effectively the preeminent position of the AAU and NABA. Their years of organization and service have given them experience and know-how that newer entrants into the field cannot match. They are also organizations whose work is carried on largely on a volunteer and non-professional basis, which means that their projects get done because people want them done and not because they are big money-making schemes. There is a strength and security in that which has enabled these organizations to withstand the storms of contention and abuse that sometimes assaults them. Neither of them is lily pure, but they essentially do a good job. I think all of this is worth consideration because young bodybuilders are constantly asking, would I be better off going to the IFBB or whatever, or with the AAU? The young, good bodybuilder is better off in the AAU. After all, he has won all the AAU titles, and there is no place for him to go but to one of the professional organizations, and that is where they perform their great service. Which one of them is the best, goodness knows. 1972 has been a very interesting year in many respects, but also very like any other year. Quite a few new stars came to the fore, and some of those who seemed unbeatable in 1971 lost a bit of their luster in 72. As a leadoff general statement, I want to say that though every contest had one or two dazzling stars, by far the best contest was the AAU Mr. America in Detroit in June. The overall level was far better than the general level anywhere else. There was no overwhelming physique, true, but every man in it was worth looking at, and there were a lot of them. There were some overwhelming physiques elsewhere, but in contests whose general level was not a championship caliber. As a means of reviewing the year, let's take a new tack and see what happened in each of the four big stables. We started off with the AAU Mr. America, so let's see what the situation was in the AAU generally. The last two Mr. Americas fizzled out of competition right after winning the title. This is sad because they were two of the best. Casey Viator has not yet, in my opinion, been matched. And Steve Mihalik has one of the most beautiful, symmetrical, and muscularly impressive physiques anywhere. He's also an extrovert who loves the limelight, so he gives a good show. He has a successful career as a commercial artist, which has apparently kept him from training for more contests after the Mr. America. But both Viator and Mihalik are very young and both capable of accomplishing much more than they yet have. There is no indication what the future holds for either of them. Grimkowski is also a question mark. Certain indications are that he will compete no more. During this past year, he somehow never seemed to come into focus. I don't know why this is, but I suspect I feel this way because Grimkowski promised so much, or rather his physique did. To my eye, he had the first truly Herculean physique that I had ever seen. When I saw him last year, I felt that when this man reached his peak, he would be Hercules incarnate. I don't think he reached his peak this year, but the potential is still there. Perhaps Grimkowski feels he can allot no more time to the rigors of training in the manner that he would have to do to realize that fantastic potential. Other men before him have found their lives too full of other interests or demands to permit bodybuilding to absorb them. One sensational physique did emerge this past year in AAU contest. It belongs to Ronald Thompson. As late at the end of May, Ronald was a rather chunky, not to say chubby fellow, with lots of size and very good proportions, but not enough real muscle shape and definition to get him anywhere. In scarcely more than 2 weeks, he reconstructed his physique and he hit the Mr. America contest with a body cut to ribbons, as the men are fond of saying. You all know what he did after that, constantly refining his physique to muscular perfection. Nobody remodels his body in 2 weeks without a lot of work. With Ron's dynamic training drive and his superb physique, he is going to be a great competitor in 1973. This was also the year of the mature physique. Men in their late 20s and 30s were challengers all down the line. Perhaps this was sparked by Bill Pearl's sensational appearance at the NAVA Universe last year. In any case, these men presented great depth and density of muscle with splendid proportions attainable after only years of work and experience. Jim Morris out-muscled most men at the Mr. America contest and everybody at the USA. He not only had a beautifully molded physique, but the poise and polish that a real champion should have. The three top men in the USA contest were all well into their 30s. I was particularly impressed by Paul Lowe. This man has what I think is one of the finest physiques that is possible to see. He's not hugely massive or bulky, but his muscle size and definition are outstanding. His physique is very athletic-looking, clean-cut, and sinewy, the kind I associate with genuine physical strength. Paul has been training and competing for many years, and he's won every major title on the Pacific Coast. This coming year, he'll be able to train even more regularly and harder, and I predict that he will emerge as one of the great physique stars of 1973 on the national and international scene. Don Ross advanced far toward the top this year, and he began to realize the impressive potential he had in 1971. The future is wide open for him, and there's no doubt that he will continue his climb next year. From that splendid Mr. America lineup, I'd also like to pull out Paul Hill, Fred Shandor, James Allen, and Bob Birdsong as men capable of a big blast next season. Paul and Fred are not newcomers. Both are experienced men who are now beginning to make everything work. Their experience will tell more and more in coming months, and since each has a physique with no serious problem areas and very high muscular resources, we can expect some excitement from them. Birdsong and Allen are comparatively new on the national scene, although Birdsong did compete at the 1971 Mr. America contest. At the moment, Bob is much more heavily muscled than Jim Allen, but Jim has a well-nigh perfect body, capable of very impressive muscle size. He is top material. It would be a mistake to pass too lightly over Phil Stepaniak, He never fails to impress whenever he's competed. He has been very successful in his local area, but he has not yet made the impact on the national scene that I'm sure he will eventually make. He has a powerful body structure capable of a Viator type of development, and one day soon we will no doubt be startled by Phil's achievement. All the Mr. America competitors were good, but these few men, to my eye, will be the super achievers in 1973 in the AAU. Several of these men competed in the Fine Mr. USA contest in Denver. This contest marked the first appearance on the national scene of a man whom I think is one of the top all-around strength athletes in the country and the possessor of a truly extraordinary physique. He is Pat Neve. At this moment, Pat's upper body is one of the greatest anywhere in the world, and his arms are matchless. He has a leg problem that will tick that, but he will lick that. This is a man to watch, and I only hope that he will persevere in his training and competition. He's a great power lifter, and he's strongly tempted to concentrate on that rather than physique competition, especially after a discouraging experience at the USA where he was badly placed. In spite of that placement, he is one of the top bodybuilders of our time, and I hope to see more of him in 1973. Before closing our consideration of the AAU stars, I'd like to draw attention to one other man who's emerged on the West Coast competition this past year, Henry Watson. If ever I saw a really great super physique on the way up, Henry has it. Henry's also a fully mature athlete of 30 with a marvelously proportioned physique, truly Herculean in muscle size. If he gets down to business, as I'm sure he will, we shall see a new star in 1973 of really amazing quality. The IFBB seems fairly tolerant of the WBBG, and certain of the East Coast bodybuilders fluctuate between them. The tendency lately, however, has been for at least the top men to be clearly identified with one or the other, although they may have competed in both leagues. Only NAVA is anathema to the IFBB, and men who compete in the NAVA contest are barred from the IFBB. The IFBB Mr. America and Mr. World contest held in Brooklyn in September under the auspices of the AABA, the American Amateur Bodybuilders Association, a subsidiary of the IFBB, had some of the overwhelming physiques we missed at the AAU Mr. America. The overall lineup, however, was not quite up to the AAU standard. The Mr. World title was given to Mike Katz, who was the most impressive, but I think I've never seen a man look better than Ken Waller did that day. He was absolute tops. Every body part fully developed to breathtaking muscle size, and his whole physique reflecting the utmost in harmonious proportion. Ken is stupendous, a very great physique indeed. Ed Corney won the Mr. America contest, and he too was a beyond praise. Ed was one of the big surprises of 1971, and this past year he has firmly established himself as one of the greatest bodybuilders of our time. I would have said that these two men were unbeatable, but there's a little matter of Mike Katz. Mike is overwhelming if a man ever was, but I don't think he matched the rugged perfection of Waller. The IFBB contest had three other men whom I would single out anytime as top notchers. Leon Brown was runner-up to Ed Corney with a physique of dazzling quality. Like Corney, Brown is short of stature, but the muscular development is very impressive and the distribution flawless. He has, in fact, one of the most aesthetically beautiful physiques it is possible to imagine, and he presents it with great taste and distinction. Somewhat the same things can be said of the physique of Roman Austin, who was a teenage wonder a few years ago and then dropped out for a while. He has not been idle. Roman is now outstanding, and he would hold his own in any company anywhere. I was very impressed by a big fellow named Anthony Marcioni, who was completely new to me and seems to be known only in the New England area. Marcioni is the fortunate possessor of a body structure like a dreadnought, very powerful looking, but at the same time, completely harmonious in proportion. With a little encouragement and work, this man could be tops in any contest. It seemed that the bodybuilder's bodybuilder was Franco Colombo. The muscle men were much more impressed by him than any other man, as far as I could tell, and I tried to find out. Franco was a guest poser at the IFBB contest with Schwarzenegger. The WBBG welcomes everybody to their contest, much as the NABBA does. Its chief men this year were Bill Grant, Warren Frederick, and that young behemoth, Louis Ferrigno. Grant came into his own with an intensely refined physique honed to bare tissue. Every fiber of his muscles was revealed clearly, and the muscles themselves were astonishing in size and contour. Bill is another athlete with the physique of outstanding beauty of form and line, and his posing is rhythmic perfection. This is a most distinguished physique and a fine young man. Warren Frederick is about as unlike Grant as it is possible to imagine. He socks you right between the eyes with the most massive accumulation of densely packed muscle any man has ever achieved. He is phenomenal. And I don't think I've ever used that word in connection with any other man so far. But Warren really is. For sheer muscular development of a thickness and hardness impossible to conceive without seeing him, he can't be beat. It is an unadulterated thrill to see Warren under the lights, although I had a strong feeling that he was not posing his body well, and I would not accuse him of projecting any kind of aesthetic quality. But if you want to see muscle, this kid's loaded. Now I come to the real WBBG big gun. He is Louis Ferrigno. No doubt about it, this young fellow is going to be the best we have seen so far. I don't hesitate for a moment to say Ferrigno is the physique of the year. Lou is a giant in every way. His body is beginning to mature, and the shape is outstanding. Fine proportions, titanic muscular development, and excellent definition. This is the most unusual young man who has overcome several handicaps, and he's grown into a fine young gentleman, deserving all the honor that I'm sure will come to him. In the early spring of the year, at another WBBG contest, I was made aware of the fine quality of Jesus Rivera's physique. I noted him down as a man to keep an eye on, but he never showed up again. I would predict a bright future for him. The NABBA universe was even smaller this year than last, but the men were big. Elias Petsis is surely one of the most outstanding men of our time. He has the blasting muscular development that Frederick has, plus a refinement that sets him apart. His quality and tone made him a fine partner to Frank Zane, who won the professional title. Zane is still unmatched in this class. I understand that he is now retired from competition, though I've heard that one before. One does feel that he has achieved what he set out to do, and now that phase of his life may be complete. He's been a great one, and bodybuilding advanced many strides because of his accomplishments. He should have gone all the way to the top, and he did. Some of the world's greatest bodybuilders are now in Britain. One of the best, in my opinion, is Tony Emmett, who came over to compete in the WBBG Mr. World and returned to compete in the NABBA Universe. He placed second in the former and fourth in the latter. Those who beat him were just plain lucky. Tony is really as good as any of them. He spent over 2 weeks with me, and if I ever get myself organized, I want to write his story for you. In the NABBA amateur ranks, there were four great men: Paul Grant, who competed over here last year at the AAU Mr. World, Roy Duvall, Bill Trotter, who is a real tall Frank Zane, and John Wood. Grant missed out on the Universe title, but he still must be counted among the great physiques of the year. And it wouldn't surprise me a bit if Duvall isn't the next Mr. Britain, though he will have a fight from Trotter and Wood. Bill Trotter is exceptional in every way, with overall quality that would take him all the way. John Wood has tremendous impact, very rugged and powerful, but not lacking that sparkle that makes a star. These are great men in anybody's book. I have just come home from our last contest of the year, Louisville's Ohio Valley contest. The winner was Carl Smith. Remember him? I asked Carl what was wrong this year. There really isn't any answer to that, but he looked marvelous, and he will be there for any competitor to reckon with in 1973. And he wasn't without competition in the Ohio Valley. There were two very fine physiques from Nashville owned by James Parcell and Gary Whitehouse, both of whom has what it takes wherever they want to go. This was a local deal, but it points up the fact that although one may range over the world in search of greatness, there is usually a good portion of it in our own backyard. Well worth taking account of in the total picture. After all, I can remember when Ken Waller competed in our backyard, and now he stands at the top of the heap. To sum up, the big thrills of 1972 for me were Waller and Ferrigno, and I came out of the year with the conviction that we will see great things from Ron Thompson. But I will keep my eyes peeled for Rivera, Austin, Brown, Mancioni, Shandor, Love, Allen, Wood, and Trotter, maybe even Pearsall. Good luck to them all. All right. I used to love those articles by Franklin Page at the end of every year. All right. Now I want to read this other article written by Steve Mihalik, 1972 Mr. America, called The Death of Bodybuilding. And this comes from the September 1972 issue of Iron Man, and Steve is on the cover doing a side chest pose. It says, I usually don't get angry very easily, but when I do get angry, you use up a great deal of energy that might be channeled into more constructive areas. But there has been something that has been annoying me for quite some time, and perhaps this is as good of a time as any to get it off my chest. Perhaps it will even stop someone from doing something that he will regret later. Maybe it will cause some who were foolish enough to start to reconsider. I hope so. I suppose I might begin by explaining the title of this article. After all, what kind of heading is that for the first in a series of articles that Perry Rader has been kind enough to ask me to do for the Iron Man readers? Let me go back a little bit. A few months ago, my wife Thomasina and I were driving through an area that I hadn't been in several years. I remember that there had been a gym around there that I had trained at for a while. I decided to see if I could find the place. I thought that there might still be someone there that I had trained with. To my surprise, I found the building which used to house the gym had been torn down. Only an empty lot, now mostly filled with refuse, was to be seen. As we rode back home, I must have been really lost in thought because I suddenly felt a gentle nudge on my side. "What's the matter?" she asked. "I've been talking to you for the last few minutes, and I bet you haven't heard a single word I said." I told her I was sorry, but that something was bothering me. I had been thinking about the gym that was no longer there. I wondered what had happened to the guys that used to train there. They'd probably found another place to train, but what if there weren't any other places? What if all the gyms were gone because, well, because bodybuilding had died? Now, I know what some of you may be thinking. Either Mihalyk has flipped or he's confusing Iron Man with a science fiction magazine. Well, neither of these is the case. But I am very serious. Perhaps under the circumstances, deadly serious would be a better way to phrase it. How could bodybuilding die? How do people die? Usually they are overcome by some type of illness. It's the same with bodybuilding. Even now, there is a disease, a cancer, that is eating away at the very fibers of our sport. And this truly upsets me. That cancer is drug usage. How could this be? How could simply taking a few pills destroy bodybuilding? Am I overstating the case? I think not. First, let's consider the basic purpose of bodybuilding. Isn't it to build and maintain good health? I think so. Certainly, most of us who train, and I definitely include myself, do so also to build as good of a physique as we possibly can. But notice that I said to also build. The primary purpose for training should be, I believe, to ensure the maintenance of an optimum level of health. Without good health, what good is a muscular physique? Realistically, how long do you honestly believe a good physique can be maintained by someone who's sick? Now let's take a closer look at drug usage and see when its possible effects may be. When most people talk about drug usage in connection with bodybuilding, they're probably referring to the use of steroids. Therefore, most of my comments will be directed at these drugs. However, there are unfortunately other drugs in current use in the bodybuilding world. The tragic report in Iron Man about an outstanding bodybuilder, Dr. Craig Whitehead, who may have ruined not only his bodybuilding career, but his medical career through the use of drugs to increase his energy level, should have alerted anyone who was either thinking of using this type of stimulant or was already using it. The equally tragic case of Don Howard's involvement, apparently with hardcore narcotics, was reported in the July 1972 issue of Iron Man. Now, what about the steroids? Are they as harmless as gumdrops or a curse to be avoided at any cost? Unfortunately, a great deal of the information about the potential damage that can result from using them hasn't been adequately publicized, nor have the cases of bodybuilders whose training careers have been ended because they had used steroids. According to several doctors that I checked with, the potential dangers from using steroids include damage to the liver, kidneys, and the prostate gland. It's also possible that steroid usage could affect your sex glands and even increase the possibility of getting cancer. Other possible effects could be hair loss, increased blood pressure, and excessive retention of fluids in the tissues. Do any of the just mentioned possibilities strike you as being desirable? If so, you probably should stop reading the article right now. In fact, if you've been wasting your time by reading it this far, but to those who are sane, intelligent people that I'm sure Iron Man readers are, consider this for a moment. Is any amount of possible gain in muscle size worth the chance of permanent damage to your health? Surely the answer must be no. Then why, unfortunately and disastrously, are apparently increasing numbers of bodybuilders using these steroids? I think it's for one of two reasons. Either they are totally uninformed about the potential dangers of using them, or they think that they just can't happen to them. I hope that this article will, in some small way, correct the first reason. As for the second, believing that they will somehow be immune to any ill effects of steroid usage, I can only hope that they will do some serious thinking and that common sense will prevail. But what does all this have to do with the title of the article, The Death of Bodybuilding? What do you think will happen when many aspiring bodybuilders realize they can't compete with those who have temporarily made gains through steroid usage? How many of them will be disgusted and dropped out? How many will become thoroughly disenchanted with the field in which some, not all, thank God, of the greatest names will eventually be revealed as drug users? How many parents will allow their sons to participate in such a sport? With regard to that last point, since I won the Mr. USA title, I've spoken before various youth and sports organizations. Now, with my Mr. America victory, I expect there will be additional requests for my participation in these groups. At each of these meetings, I've always been asked if I thought that getting young people involved in bodybuilding could keep them from getting hooked on drugs. Should I tell these concerned parents and teachers that a type of drug usage is apparently on the increase in the bodybuilding world? Do you think this will help promote our sport? In all honesty, I tell them that hopefully, if a boy understands the real purpose of bodybuilding, he would never permit his body to become contaminated with drugs. I tell them this because that is what I believe. Let's consider one other aspect of the entire matter. Can a great physique be obtained without the use of drugs? My answer is unconditionally yes. I have been fortunate enough to win the highest bodybuilding award that one can win in the United States, the Mr. America title. I believe that Perry Rader is printing my sworn statement with regards to my never having used drugs in my entire bodybuilding career. Dennis Tenorino, who provided me with invaluable assistance in the training during the last few years, has stated publicly many times that he never has and never will take drugs in any form. Certainly, Dennis must be regarded as one of the greatest physiques of our time. I cite Dennis as an example because I know him personally, and I've discussed this matter with him. But steroids have appeared on the bodybuilding scene only during the last 10 years, and really, their widespread usage has taken place during the last 5 years. Were there great physiques before that time? You better bet your barbell there were. I could write a list that would fill several pages, but just to refresh a few memories, there were, and in some cases still are, John Grimmick, Reg Park, Bill Pearl, Clarence Ross, Steve Reeves, Jack Dellinger, George Eiferman, Marvin Etter, Leroy Colbert, Roy Hilligan, Leo Robert, Eric Pedersen, John Frobotnick, John McWilliams, Abe Goldberg, Bob Hines, Tom Sansone, Joe Abenda, and, as I said, the list could go on and on. I hope that Perry Rader has time to dig back into his files for some pictures of these bodybuilders I mentioned, and the great many more that I omitted because of the lack of space. I think that some of the younger bodybuilders would be greatly enlightened, and some of the more advanced ones would have their memories jogged. This article has gone on a bit longer than I originally intended it to be, but if I have helped anyone buy it, then I have accomplished what I set out to do. In closing, may I ask Iron Man readers to do something? I mentioned earlier in this article that it was to be one of a series that I will be writing for Iron Man. If any of the readers have suggestions about topics that they would like me to discuss, I'd appreciate hearing from them. They can write to me in care of Iron Man, and I promise to read every letter, and I try to follow as many of the suggestions as I possibly can. And then they have a notary letter here at the top of the page. It says, to whom it may concern, I, Steve Mihalik, do hereby state that I have never taken drugs in any form as an aid to my bodybuilding career. And then Steve signed it, and then it's notarized. The notary public from the state of New York, Sylvia Samuels, also stamped it with the notary public stamp, and she signed it. So that's pretty funny because, like I said, Steve did a lot of steroids, and he was known for using an excessive amount of steroids that very few other bodybuilders were back then. So kind of crazy. I guess he was just trying to promote the image of Mr. America and say that he was natural. But you notice he didn't use the word natural. I don't think they had that word back then. But it's kind of funny that 50 years ago, they were still arguing about who's natural and who's not. And Steve was claiming that he never used drugs, just like the Liver King and so many other bodybuilders. So that's interesting stuff. All right, guys. Well, that's it for the show. So next week, we will be back with part two of our interview with Jerry, where we talk about the year 1972. And as I mentioned, we'll talk about the 72 Mr. Olympia, the IFBB America, the IFBB World, and the IFBB Universe that Franklin Page talked a little bit about in his article. But we will talk about it much more in depth. So I hope everyone enjoys their Christmas. Thank you again for supporting the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. If you want to become a sponsor and a Patreon sponsor of the show, just go to the bodybuildinglegendsshow.com website. And in the upper right-hand corner, you'll see the link to become a Patreon donor. So I appreciate all you guys who are continuing to support the show. And I hope everybody has a great Christmas and stay warm because I know it's cold everywhere in the country. So have a great Christmas. Enjoy it with your families. And we will see you guys next week. Take care.